Chiamo Afurakanu Afuraikaitnut Eneye Ojira Da Medinde Ojirafo Kwesi Radnehem Pata Akan. Today is Ojira Day. This is our first episode of our radio show. My name is Ojirafo Kwesi Radnehem Pata Akan. Akwamu Mine Amaruka Etifi Mu Ojirafo, the Ojirafo of the Kwamu Nation of North America. If somebody can send me a message real quick in the chat, let me know you can hear me, and then we can get started right quick. I see we have some people in the chat. So just somebody just send a quick message, let me know you can hear. Okay, you can hear good? Sound is clear? All right. Okay, so what we want to do, and let me know if you have any problems with the chat or the sound, just let me know. What we want to do is we want to go through the document that we posted. It's on the front page of Blog Talk Radio, of our site. Kam-ur, Kamet, Urit, Asar, Aset, and the enslavement and restoration of the Afurakani, Afuraikaitnut African Amenti in the West. So we want to go through that document, show how this information directly impacts Afurakani, Afuraikaitnut people in general, and Afurakanu, Afuraikaitnut Africans or black people in America in particular. So we're going to go through some text and different shows as well as a lot of different information. First, let's talk about quickly, we want to talk about Ojira. So as you can see on the front page, Ojira is a term that means purification. In Akan, the verb form is Jira, which means to purify, to cleanse, and so forth. The noun version is Ojira, which means purification. It also means a celebration of purification. We showed the Medutu from ancient Kemet and ancient Kani, showing that Jira also means to purify, purification. It also says a celebration of purification. So it's showing that the term specifically, not only what it means, but in Akan culture, the Akan people as well as others are directly descendant from ancient Kani, ancient Kanat, Nubia, ancient Kemet. We simply migrated west and reestablished civilization. So it's the same term with the same meaning, the same functional, not only for purification, but even a celebration of purification. When it says a celebration for purification in the Medutu, Jira, in Akan culture, many Akan people, millions of Akan people, the name of our New Year celebration is Ojira, purification. And in Akwamu Mai, Amaruka Isi Fimu, the Akwamu Nation of North America, we call it Obra Jira, a life purification, Nananom Som, ancestral religious observance. So that term is very essential. Ojira or Jira purification is, through Ojira we operationalize Nanasom, Afurakani, Afuraikaitnut, African ancestral religion. Through purification, that's the means by which you operationalize that. When you talk about religion, and we're speaking specifically of real religion, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Hinduism, Buddhism, Taoism, pseudo-metaphysics, Hermeticism, all these other different forms, exoteric and esoteric, are not religion. They're perversions of fragments of religion. The only real religion that exists, has ever existed, and ever will exist, is Afurakani, Afuraikaitnut, African ancestral religion, no matter what form it takes, whether it's Akan or Yoruba or Igbo or Maasai or San or Chokwe or Lobi or whatever the group is. Hoodoo in America, Voodoo in America, Juju in North America, these different expressions of ancestral religion. This is Afurakani, Afuraikaitnut, ancestral religion. That's the only true religion that exists. We talk about, and we use the term Nanasom as a catch-all term for Afurakani, Afuraikaitnut ancestral religion. In essence, when you have real religion, We have ancestral religion. It is the ritual incorporation of divine law and the ritual restoration of divine balance. So through ritual, we incorporate those things, objects, deeds, or entities we need to harmonize with divine order. And through ritual, we restore balance to our lives when imbalance occurs. And when we engage that expansive and contractive process of incorporating law and restoring balance through ritual, then we can execute the function we were given to execute in the world. That's what ancestral religion leads us to. Every Afro-Darkani person or African person, black person, and Afro-Darkani people only have a specific function given to us by the Great Mother, Great Father, Supreme Being, encoded within our head, encoded within our cry, our soul, our divine consciousness, and we have a means by which we must execute that function. If we make mistakes and get out of alignment with our kra, with our soul, our divine consciousness, our ka, kaet, or re'inu, as they call it in the Yoruba tradition, our kra, nakan, our krawa, the state mido and the vodun, and so forth, then we engage in ritual processes to incorporate law and restore order, restore balance, restore alignment, so that we can move forward and execute our function in the world. So that's what ancestral religion is about. That's what Nana Som is. So when you have Nana Som, ancestral religion, you can restore order, you can incorporate those things you need and restore balance to yourself when imbalance occurs. Then that's the foundation, or that's what animates our culture, which we call Amambre, the way, Dere of the Amain, the nation. Ancestral religion animates culture. Culture is the divine acceptance of order and the divine rejection of disorder. The acceptance or the law or love of order and the divine hatred and hate of disorder and its purveyors. Culture means a specific way of life. Amambre, Amain, means nation or the people. Dere means a time. It also means space or place. It also means a specific manner. So Amambre means the way, Dere, or manner, Dere, of the nation, the Amain, the people. That's what we define as culture, the way of the nation. There's a certain way we are to operate, and there are certain things we are not to do. That's just the way we are encoded. There are specific things we need to focus on, specific things we need to stay away from. That's the laws that govern creation. We are part of the created universe, the Apatie, and we have a specific culture. We often use the example of the Odenchen, which there's a proverb in Yakan culture, Odenchen da Nsio, which means the crocodile lies in water. Nso ahomi, or ahomi mframa, he breathes air. So the Odenchen lies in the water, however, he breathes air. You see the crocodiles swimming in the water. They live in an environment, in a milieu where they're surrounded by other entities, fish, that function in a certain manner. You'll see the crocodile, all you'll see is the nose and the eyes of the crocodile, but the rest of their body is underwater as they're swimming around. They're in an environment where everybody else swims and lives in the water as well, but they breathe underwater through gills. If the crocodile was not inherently or innately, intrinsically in tune with its nature, it may attempt to do what everybody else in that milieu or that environment is doing and attempt to function in that manner. And, of course, they would drown. So because they're innately aware and in tune with who they are and their specific culture or their way of life based on who they are, then they function accordingly. When you know who you are and have an identity which is rooted in ancestral religion, actually that's what teaches you what your identity is, then that animates your culture, your way of life, the way you are to function. And when you have Nana Som, ancestral religion, Amambre, ancestral culture, those are the two points of an Ahinasa, a triangle, the base points which support the apex, which is Amain Sesio, which is nation building, nation restoration. So those are three components that have to do with our akofadi or liberation, ancestral religion, culture, which supports nation building. That's the Obrahinasa, or Life Triangle of Ahafadi Liberation. Now, Ojida, or purification, and specifically Ahojida, self-purification, that animates ancestral religion. In order to incorporate law, we purify ourselves physically and spiritually. In order to restore balance to ourselves, we purify ourselves physically and spiritually. And when you engage that process, then you can move forward and be receptive to those things that are in harmony with order. When you purify yourself, you can be receptive to those things that you need to do to restore balance to your life. And therefore, you can move forward. So that's why Jida or Ojida is critical. It operationalizes ancestral religion. When we talk about my ancestral nation building or what we need to do as a people and recognizing all the issues that we have, people have skill. There's not a deficit per se of skills or our capacity to acquire skill. People are engineers. People are surgeons. People are engaged in military activity, and if they had their own nation, they would understand a way to utilize that in a much better way. People have administrative acumen with regard to governmental structure, and if they had their own, they would be able to apply that in a productive fashion. Every field of endeavor, Afurakani, Afurakaini people are engaged in, and we have a skill set that supports and that's an expression of that field. Everything we need to nation build, whether it's agricultural science, whether it's healing, medicine, conventional, so-called conventional, and then, of course, the true traditional medicine, ancestral medicine, military structures, institutionalization of values through government administration and so forth, systems of government and jurisprudence. We have people who are lawyers, doctors, doctors of jurisprudence, we have lawyers, we have judges, and of course, if we had our own structure, these legal minds would be able to invest their talent and their brilliance into a real structure instead of supporting this structure. Now, of course, you also have people in the legal arena who are functioning in spite of the structure to save our people who have been unjustly locked up and everything else. So, we also have people who deal with textiles, people who are engineers, people who build. We have everything we need skill set-wise to establish an independent nation and defend an independent nation. The one thing we do not have is amambre, which is culture. And the reason we don't have amambre, an authentic culture, is because we have not embraced nanason, an authentic expression of Afurakani, Afuraikaidi ancestral religion, which means a means by which you can incorporate law and restore balance to yourself when imbalance occurs. And until we embrace Amambre and Nanasoma, ancestral religion and culture, those, again, are the two bottom points of the triangle which supports the apex of Ama ancestral nation building. So if you don't have culture, because you don't have an ancestral religion or an authentic expression of ancestral religion, you don't have the foundational basis to support a nation-building process, and, of course, this is why we're in the state that we're in. The whites and their offspring are enemies, which includes the white Europeans, Americans, Hispanics, Asians, Hindus, all non-black people are spiritually spirits of disorder. They incarnate as spirits of disorder. It's not because they just act a certain way and one day they're going to change. They incarnate as spirits of disorder. They are divinely hated by the Supreme Being, Great Mother and Great Father, Amenet and Amen, or Inyamewa and Inyame and Akan culture, or Lisa and Mawu and Vodun, or Komosu and Chukwu and Igbo. The Great Mother and the Great Father, the Supreme Being, operate according to divine order that they've fashioned, and the whites and their offsprings are spirits of disorder, just like cancerous cells in the body go against the body, and they will consume and destroy the entire body unless their development is arrested. They are isolated, destroyed, and expelled. That is the only answer for the whites and their offspring. So, all that to say, Ojida purification is foundation. Purification operationalizes nanasom, ancestral religion. And when you have, when you engage that process on a daily basis of purification, physically and spiritually, then you can move forward. It's no different than cleansing yourself physically. When you get up in the morning, you cleanse yourself, you purge yourself of waste. You don't do that just so you can be clean and then you can go back to sleep. You cleanse yourself and purge yourself so that you can move forward and execute your function throughout the day in a harmonious fashion. We engage ancestral religion and culture so that we can support a nation-building process. We don't engage ancestral religion and culture so that we can just, you know, engage in some magic. That's nonsense. We engage the forces in nature. We engage the ancestresses and ancestors so that we can align ourselves and realign ourselves with divine order so that we can support a nation-building process. So that's why Jida, purification, is key. Aho Jida, self-purification, is key. And until we do that, we won't move forward. So, and many of us have that, we have that instinctive standing. We couldn't put our finger on it, so we start looking in different areas to try to find that sense of, or a vehicle by which we can purify ourselves, clean ourselves up, realign ourselves, get in harmony with order so that we can move forward. So the whites and their offspring understand that. So they do everything they can to keep us away from our own culture and force us into their fake pseudo-religions like Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Hebrewism, Taoism, Hinduism, Vedanta, Hermeticism, pseudo-metaphysics, Kabbalism, pseudo-Native American spirituality, all of this nonsense, extraterrestrialism, sex cult spirituality, drug addict spirituality, all of this nonsense. So we're going to break away from all that New Age nonsense, all of that lost landism, Negroes talking about they're coming from Atlantis and moving foolishness like that. We crush all of that. So now, this particular article that we posted, Kamur Kamet Horit Asar Aset, in the enslavement and restoration of the Afurakani Afurakani, the African in Amenti in the West. First, let us get a quick definition of the term Afuraka, Afuraikai. Many people have been misinformed by the whites and their offspring, as well as black so-called scholars, as well as others who have embraced false tradition, false religion, pseudo-religion, false historicity, and so forth. And so they engage in nonsense. They give us this false definition of Africa. They don't want to be African. They want to identify with anything other than, they want to be extraterrestrial. They want to be Asian. They want to be pseudo-Native American. They want to be all kinds of, take all kinds of identities outside of who they really are. They want to be Moors and Hebrews and all this nonsense. So they try to define the term Africa based on what the whites and their offspring forced upon us. We have a publication, Afuraka, Afuraikaet, the origin of the term Africa, where we show cosmologically and linguistically where the term comes from. On the front cover of the text, and it's the PDF version, the e-book version of that book, and we have about 12 books, over 60 research articles, all of those 70-plus publications, books and articles, are all free downloads from our website. We make the ebook versions of all of our publications free, and then we have seven of our 12 books so far at this particular point. We also have in soft cover, which we print ourselves, we print in-house in color, and we sell those, of course, because we print them and we, you know, they cost money to print and so forth. So we sell those, but the PDF versions are free, and you can download those at any time from our website at ojirafo.com. On the front cover of Afuraka Afuraikai, the origin of the term Africa, we have directly from the chef of Hunefer, the papyrus of Hunefer, the term Afrakai, which is, if you look at chapter 17, plate 5, in the papyrus of Hunefer, chapter 17, place 7 in the papyrus of Ani, you will find that when they're talking about Ra, talking about the creation of the world, and when he causes the first landmass to rise up out of the primordial ocean, that first landmass is called Ka. And Ra sits upon that landmass, and when he operates through matter, he's called Afu Ra, just like Ra'et, the creatress, is called Afu Ra'et, when she operates through matter. When Ra is operating through the sky and sailing across the sky, utilizing the sun as a transmitter of his energy, then he's called Ra, and she is called Ra'et. When the sun sets and the energy, Ra operating through the sun, utilizing the sun as a transmitter of energy, and of course Ra is not the sun, the sun is called Aten and Ateni. Ra uses the sun as well as other stars to transmit energy, just like you can use an instrument to transmit energy. So he uses the sun. So when the sun sets and the sun goes into the quote-unquote underworld, Ra, the spiritual energy, moves through matter, and matter is called Afu, so he takes on the title Afu Ra. So when you see, for example, in the Shatn Duat, or the book of what is in the underworld or the spirit realm, you'll see Ra, who has taken the form when he's moving through the 12 hours of the night, he's in the night boat. He has, instead of having the hawk head like he had in the boat, when he's sailing across the sky during the day, when he goes through the underworld, now he takes the form of a ram-headed divinity with a solar disk on the crown. And he's called Afu Ra, sometimes Afu, Afu Ra. And he's moving through matter. When Afu Ra moves through the first landmass, the raised land, which is called the Ka, that landmass is called the Ka of Afu Ra, Afu Ra Ka. And when Ra'et moves through that landmass, it's the Ka'et or Afu Ra'et or Afu Ra'et Ka'et. So we go into detail about that. We are the first people, black or otherwise, to publish the actual origin of the term Africa. We are the first to be able to show conclusively in the Medutu, in the hieroglyphics, the actual term spelled out in relation to the fashioning of the first landmass of Earth. And it's in the text, on the front cover and throughout the text. So you can check that out and go into detail about that. We also dispel all the false etymologies, for example, Latin, Afrika in Greek, Afrik in Ifriqiya in Arabic, talking about the Queen of Heaven, or Afar, meaning a dusty land, or Phoenician, meaning the land of fruit, Farika in Sanskrit, talking about Apara, or the land that comes after. All of those terms, they're not the origin of the term Afuraka, Afrika, or Africa. We show exactly that that's not the case, but then we also show where those terms come from. These are not different terms from different languages around the world that have certain meanings. Every one of those terms, from Sanskrit, Latin, Greek, Phoenician, Arabic, and so forth, all of them can be found in the Medutu with the same definitions that they're found in those different languages, because they all come from the language of ancient Kemet. So we show the actual Medutu for all of those terms. So when they say Apara means, in Sanskrit, the land that comes after, and that refers to Africa because it's west of India. Para or Pera means progeny or posterity, or that those who come after in Kemet. And the same thing with all the other terms. We show that they're not Latin, they're not Greek, they're not Phoenician, they're not Arabic. They all come from Kemet with the same meaning. And then we also show the actual origin etymologically and cosmologically of the term Africa. We also dispel the notion that the term comes from Leo Africanus. First of all, there's a difference between Leo Africanus, who lived 500 years ago, and then Scipio Africanus, who lived over 2,000 years ago. And he took on the name Africanus after he invaded Afuraka, Afurakaida, Africa, just like his brother, Scipio Asiaticus, took on the name Asiaticus after he invaded. But prior to that, their last name was Scipio. He was named Publius Cornelius Scipio, and his brother's name was Lucius Cornelius Scipio. And his father's name was Publius Cornelius Scipio, and his grandfather's name was Lucius Cornelius Scipio, and his great-grandfather's name was Lucius Cornelius Scipio Barbatus. So you have Barbatus, Scipio, 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 up until they invaded. And when their one brother invaded Afuraka Afuraikai, he became Scipio Africanus. And the other brother invaded Asia and became Scipio Asiaticus. Just like the one who invaded Asia didn't name Asia, the one who invaded Afuraka Afuraikai did not name the continent Africa. So we go into detail about that in the book. We have it all laid out. Okay, and the brother just posted the link. May I say for posting that, because it's, and everybody can check that out. All right, and we also, just as a side note, we mentioned this in the book. Some people thought that actually Dr. Ben made up the term Al-Kabulan because they couldn't find it. They couldn't find it anywhere. And you have people, actually, you will see people online saying, well, he must have made that up. And then some people, of course, use that term because they believe that's an ancient indigenous term for the continent of Africa, and it's not. It's an Arabic term. If you look in the work, and we mentioned this in the book, of Leo Africanus of 500 years ago, he's the one who mentions Al-Kabulan, and he spells it with M instead of an N, and he says the Numidians and other people, Arabians, use that term to designate the continent. If you look at the al prefix, you can see that, but we actually go into the etymology of the term Al-Kabulan and show you where it comes from. Al-Kabulan or El-Gebelain, Gebelain is an Arabic term which means the two mountains. So El-Gebelain is the land of the two mountains. It's talking about mountain ranges. It's dealing with first outside of Afuraka, Afuraika. If you go into ancient Kananu or Kanana, which is called Canaan, the divinity El-Gabal or the old man of the mountain. El-Gabal is related to El-Gebelain or El-Gebelain. This is where that comes from. So we go into all of that etymology in the book. All right, so just so we can get that out of the way, so when we use that, the terms Afuraka, Afuraikai, Ka means soul, Kai means soul, but it also means specifically a raised land. A flat land is Ta, and Taet, a plain. A raised land is Ka, Kaet, a mountain. A raised land, a high land, a land above the banks of the river. So Ka in Kemet or Kaka in Akan is Koko, which means a mountain or a hill or a raised land. So Afuraka is the land Ka of Afura, the creator. Afuraikai is the land Kaet of Afurai, the creatress. And when we say we are Afurakani or Afuraikai, we are people or children of Afura, Afurai, children of the original land, the raised land, the first land, children of the creator and creatress. Amen and Amenet are the supreme being. They give birth to the creator and creatress. The creator and creatress are different from the supreme being. They are subordinate to and servants of the supreme being. We go into all of that in the Kukutun Tum and other texts. So we just wanted to throw that out there. So let's get into this text. We're going to get into Kam-Ur, Kamet, Urt, Asar, Aset, and the enslavement and restoration of the Afurakani, Afuraikai, or African and Amenti in the West. So you, of course, you see, first let me put the, if you look at the front page of our blog talk page, you will see, you know, under the episode piece, you'll see the link to the article. So you can download the article now. And hold on one second. Let me pull that up. Give me one second. I just want to pull it up. And if you have any questions, you can post them in the chat. Because we will be taking questions soon. We just want to go through this document, give some further clarification for people who had some questions about it, and then we're going to move forward. Just want to post the link. All right, there's the link for those who are in the chat right now. If you're not in the chat, just look on the blogtalkradio.com/OG.4 and the link is there. All right, so if you see on the front page of the text, you will see, of course, bird's eye view of a ship of enslavement with our people on that ship, and then we show the image of Al-Sar in the coffin. And that's key. So Kam Ur, Kamet Ur. We want to show this. We first talk about divine kingship and divine queenship in Apuraka, Apurakai, and Akan culture, as well as the culture of ancient Kemet and other cultures across the continent. The king is the representative of the people to the ancestresses and ancestors, who we call Nananum Nsamanfo in Akan culture. Everything that the people are and have the potential to be is summed up and culminates in the person of the king, their representative, when he goes before the ancestresses and ancestors and pours libation and communicates on behalf of the online of the nation. He's a representative of the people. The queen mother is a representative of and a vessel of the ancestral spirits to the people. So the king is a representative of the people to the ancestral spirit from earth to the spirit realm. The queen mother is the gateway or the representative of the ancestral spirits to the people from the spirit realm to the physical realm. She is a vessel of the ancestral spirits. The king and the queen mother are connected to their ancestors and ancestors, of course. A king can have, a male can grow up and have ancestors and ancestors connected to him. And when he copulates with a woman, one of his ancestors or ancestresses' spirit can enter the womb of that woman and be born 40 weeks later as a child. The same thing with she can have an ancestor or ancestors connected to her ever since she was growing up. And when she finally grows up, gets married, populates with a husband, draws one of her ancestresses or ancestors into the womb, and, you know, 40 weeks later the child is born and the ancestor or ancestress has returned to the world. So, but the female is a vessel of the ancestresses and ancestors. She has an added role because only she can possess that ancestral spirit for 9 months, and she becomes the vessel by which the ancestral spirit enters into the physical world and is born into the physical world. So she's a representative, a walking vessel of the ancestral spirits to the people. The king, in certain ritual capacities, is a representative of the people to the ancestresses and ancestors. And they're asking for direction and guidance for the nation to those past kings and queen mothers and great elders and elderesses who are now Nsamanfo. The king makes that petition. So he's a representative of the people. So we talk about that, and we show that that's in Kemet as well as Akan culture. And we talk about, further in the article, we talk about the ancestral communication. That's true in Akan culture. It's also true in ancient Kemet because, of course, we migrated from that ancient culture. Now, that's important to know because one of the titles of Al-Sar is Kam Ur. Kam means black. Ur means great. And then, of course, Kamet Uret, Uri, or Ura, is a title of Al-Set. They're both the great black one, the great black. And when we're talking about the great black one, we're talking about Al-Sar, and of course he has black skin. Sometimes it's shown as green skin, and he's called Watch Ur. Watch means green. Ur means great. So green skin, talking about our rejuvenation and fertility and so forth. But then he's also called Kam Ur, and show with black skin. He's the great black one. He's not just the great black one because his skin is black. That's one of the reasons, but he's a representative as a king of the nation. So he represents the great black one of the great black nation. You also have his brother, Set, who is called Desher. Desher means red. So Set is called the red one. He governs the red land. Al-Sar governs the black land. So let's go to the cosmology for a second. We talk about Ra and Ra'et creating the universe. Atem comes from Ra and Ra'et. Then if you go through quickly the cosmology, Atem, then you have Asaset, Nebethetepet, Asaset, Nebetet, and then you also have Kepra, and those two Earth Mother divinities, Asaset, Nebethetepet, Asaset, Nebetet, and we have links to information about them on the website, give birth to Shu and Tahnu. And when we talk about Atem and Atasset Nebethepet, this specific divinity, and she's not a form of Atasset, she's actually Asase Afua in Akan culture, an earth mother divinity. Some texts will talk about Atem. If you look, for example, in the Nesi Amsu text, they talk about Atem grasping in his clenched hand and then giving birth to Shu and Tefnu. They say he had union with his clenched hand. Then they also say he took his kahibit as a wife and gave birth to Shu and Tefnu. Of course, the wife and their offspring will try to infuse their sexual deviance into this text and say that he was talking about masturbation because he had union with his clenched hand. Asaset Nebethetepet, she's called the hand of the god. Her symbol is the vulva, or the vagina. The vagina is considered a hand. It's referred to as a hand, like a third hand for the woman. It just simply means that the woman with the vagina is an active participant in the procreative process. She's just not a passive vessel to be filled up with the seed of the male. She's a magnet for the male. That's active. She's magnetic. She draws the male to her in general. The ovum, the egg, is magnetic. It draws the sperm cell to it so it can fuse. The hand, or the kaet, as we call it in ancient Kemet, the vagina is active. It draws the male to the female and draws the seed out of the male. The female is just as active in the procreative process as the male. So Asaset Nebethetepet, one of her symbols, Medut, determinative Medut, is the vulva. So at the same time, she's called the hand of the god. Just like today, a man will say, my wife is my right hand. He's not saying that he's a single man and he's engaged in sexual deviance. He's talking about his actual wife is his right hand because he depends on her. That comes from ancient culture. The king, or Atem, the divinity, he called Asaset Nebethetepet, this divinity, this goddess, this female force in nature, his hand. And he had union with his hand. He had union with Asaset Nebethetepet, and they gave birth to Shu and Tahnu. Atem is called Odomankuma, or Atem Kepra, or Atem Kopa, or Atumu Kopa becomes Odomankuma in Akan, and Asaset Nebethetepet is called Asase Afua, the earth mother in Akan. So Odomankuma and Asase Afua uniting to create is the same as Atem, Atem Kopa, Atem Kepra, and Asaset Nebethetepet in ancient Kemet. They give birth to Shu and Tahnu, expansive and contractive forces in nature. Shu and Tahnu give birth to Geb and Nut. Geb is the earth crust divinity, the male earth crust divinity. Nut is the female operating through the sky that touches the earth. You'll see Nut bent over Geb, the union of heaven and earth, and they give birth to Asar, Aset, Set, and Nebehet, two sets of twins. Asar governs the black soil substance, the black earth. Set governs the red soil substance, which is the red earth, including red clay as well as deserts. Aset governs the river waters of earth. Nebehet governs the rain waters of earth. So Nut and Geb, earth and sky, earth crust and sky, the earth mother is Asaset Nebethetepet, Asaset Nebetet. The earth, the crust of the earth, Geb, the sky, Nut, union of earth and sky gives birth to black soil, red soil, rivers, rain, and so forth. And then other divinities like birth, Asar and Aset give birth to Heru and so forth, and Set and Nebethet give birth to Anpu, and it just continues to go on that way. Asar is called the Great Black One, partially because of the land, the black soil substance, the black land, which is Kemet. Also, it has to do with skin color. It also has to do with the country. It also has to do with their function in creation. Set operates through the red land, the red clay, the red desert. It also has to do with skin color. It also has to do with the nation. So when we talk about Kam-Ur, or the Great Black One, Hothar is the great black one, but he's also representative of the people, so it represents the great black nation. Set is called Desher, the red one. He also represents the red, quote-unquote, nation. And the red nation and the black nation fighting one another, and the red earth attacks the black earth. The red desert encroaches upon the black earth. The black earth dies in ancient Kemet every year. When the river waters receded, then the nation was kind of, quote-unquote, governed by the desert. It was hot. It was dry. There was no fertility. There's no rain coming. The red land is ruling. And then at some point, the rain's coming south. It causes the river to swell. The black silk is carried up river. It's deposited on the banks of the river. The black land comes forward. It gives birth to, you know, fertility and so forth. The earth is reborn. Fertility is reborn. Asar has returned, placed on the banks of the river. He gives birth to Heru, the green shoots that come up. You see Heru being born out of the green shoots and so forth. And the land is returned to fertility because Heru comes up out of that blackness, out of that black, the union of the black earth and the river water, the union of Asar and Aset, and they give birth to the green shoots that will pop up the solar energy from the core of earth and connect it with the sun. Heru is born from that, and then he takes over. He takes over from Set. The green fertile earth is now back in charge. The desert lands recede. Heru removes Set from power, and the land is restored to fertility. So we go into detail about that in the Kukutuntun, and we're going to get into some of that. We just wanted to make note that when we're talking about Kemet and we're talking about Desher, the black land and the red land, we're talking about three things. We're talking about the people, their skin color, we're talking about the land itself, and we're talking about, of course, the two nations. Now, there's no debate about that. The whites and their offspring know that Kemet means the black land, but of course they wanted to say it just meant the land itself because they didn't want to tie black people to the land because they wanted to make it appear that ancient Kemet, or ancient Egypt, as they will call it, was white. So they can't have an understanding that, you know, it means the black country, the black nation, but also the black soil, and also the skin of the people. It means all three of those things. That's never been a debate with people who know about the information. The whites and offspring, of course, are going to lie. And you have black people who recognize, wait a minute, the whites and their offspring are lying. It's really talking about the people and the nation. But some of them would say, well, it's not talking about the soil. It's really talking about the people. And the nation. It's really talking about all three. If you understand cosmology and you're engaged in ritual practice, this is why Nanasom is important. Ancestral religion is important. We still engage these Abosom, these Orisha, these Vodou, these Ntoru, Ntorutu, today. They still possess us today. They still communicate with us today through divination, through shrine work. They show themselves to us today. So we know we have a relationship with these Abosom, Afurakani, Afurakani people, not just on the continent, but here in America. We never stopped, left the culture. We never stopped being possessed by the Abosom ritually. We continue to practice our culture under the forms of hoodoo and voodoo and juju and so forth. These spirits still possess us. They still heal people through us. They still communicate with us ritually at shrine consultation. They show themselves to us. They work with us. They teach us. So we never lost connection with them. And if you still embrace that connection and engage that process, you know these divinities. You know who Awusi or Asar is. You know who Awuku is, or Set, or Eshu, Legba, Obatala, Asar, Oshala, Asar, Orishanla, Babanla, different titles of Asar in the Yoruba tradition. You know who they are. You know who they are, Awusi in Akan tradition, and Awuku is Set in the Akan tradition. Awusi is Asar in Akan tradition. Asar is also called Obri, the black one, in the Akan tradition. So you know them. So it's never been a question. It's the black soil, the red land, the red soil. It's also the skin of the people. It's also the nation. So we show a couple of pictures. When we're talking about the skin of the people are dark brown with red undertones, like the Maasai and other groups of people. We show a picture of Maasai one. Then you also have people who are dark brown with black undertones, for example, like the Wolof people or Dinka people. You'll see that there's the difference. Dark brown with red undertones are the reds. Dark brown with black undertones are the blacks. So that's what we're talking about. We're all dark brown, but then the undertones is what changes the equation. The reason the undertones are there is because we're connected with the land and connected with the Abosom, the divinities that govern the land. And the kind of energy complex that they have affects us. When they first possessed us thousands of years ago, that changed our characteristics physiologically, and we've passed that down ever since. We're connected to the land and the forces of nature that animate the land, and they still possess the people and get inside the bodies of the people during ritual. And people's cells are affected by that. And when they have children, their children's cells resonate at the frequency of these divinities, so they have that red undertone, or they have a black undertone that's directly connected to the land itself, to the skin of the people, and then when they fashion the nation. You see that in ancient Kemet. We also have that in the Akan tradition. So, for example, the Bonof people, Akan people, the first major nation or empire established by the Akan in the savannah region going into the forest belt where they are now, was the Bono Akan people. And most Akan groups will say they came from the Bono Empire and then broke away. The Asante, the largest Akan group, the Fanti, the next largest Akan group, the Akwamu, and various others, Jamai, and they'll all say, well, we were, at one point, we were all in the Bono Empire about 1,000 years ago, and then people started breaking away. The Bono, where they are right now, at first, we were up into the ancient empire of Ghana or Akana. And one of the titles, major titles of the ancient so-called Nubia is Kanat or the Kanit land. We have an article about that. Khan, in Akan tradition, Khan means first or foremost. It also means to count or to reckon, to calculate. So when Akan people are asked, why do you call yourself Akan? They say, well, Khan means first or foremost. We're a component part of the first people created on earth. And then Khan also means to calculate or to count or to reckon. It means the first people to calculate, to reckon, to engage the process of civilization. The foundation of civilization is the capacity to measure, to count, to calculate, and so forth. Of course, Tahuti and Tishat, the male and female divinities of divine wisdom, are those who calculate or measure or reckon everything according to the standard of Ma'ah and Ma'at, the divine male and female forces of law and balance. So we say Khan means to counter, to reckon. It also means first and foremost. The name Khan in ancient Nubia Kanit, Khan means first land, foremost, from the beginning, land of the south, the first land, Kanat. Khan also means to count or to reckon in the ancient language of Kemet. So the same two meanings in Kemet, you'll find the same two meanings as Akan people, and the people in Nubia will call Kanitu or Kanatu, the Khan people or Kanit people. And when we migrated from Kanit and Kemet and migrated west, we reestablished the ancient Kanat Empire, or ancient Ghana. And then because some of our people saw that there were Muslim invasions, some of our people started getting engaged in that nonsense. We saw the neighborhood going down, and we did the same thing back then that we do now. When the neighborhood starts to deteriorate to the point where people are engaged in all kinds of nonsense, we leave the neighborhood and move somewhere else and reestablish ourselves. So we moved south from that ancient empire about 1,000-plus years ago, moved further south towards where Ghana and Ivory Coast are today, northeastern Ivory Coast, northwest Ghana, and then we filtered down into central, where central Ghana is now, all the way to the south, to the coast. And then some of our people broke away and migrated west and went into what is now Ivory Coast. So you have about 11 million Akan people in Ghana, about 45% of the population, and you have about 9 million Akan people in Ivory Coast, of Côte d'Ivoire, which is about 42% of the population. So almost the same amount, 11 million, 9 million. But we migrated from ancient Kanat, the Kanit land, Nubia. Thousands of years ago, we migrated west. We reestablished Kanat or Ghana. When the Muslim invasions came, we went south. Same thing happened with some of the Mende-speaking people like the Dogon. They went up into the Bandiagara cliffs, as we mentioned before, because they didn't want to be involved in Islam, and they saw the deterioration of their neighborhood, so they moved up and continued to practice their Dogon culture. We moved south, reestablished civilization, Akan civilization or Akana civilization, in the savanna regions, and then we moved down further into the forest belt into the coast. The first nation or empire that we established was Bono, the Bono Nation. And then the various other Akan groups started breaking away hundreds of years after that. The Bono will say, first when they migrated to the savanna region, they didn't have their settlements immediately. They moved into a savanna region and then a forest region, so they had to establish settlements. But in the meantime, they had to protect themselves from leopards, Osebo leopards and Jata lions and so forth. So they found a place where there were caves, and they would reside in those areas for protection. The place is called Amuowi. So during the Apol festival in Techimai today amongst the Bono, when they're singing their songs and talking about their origin and playing the drums, they'll say, Yefri Amuowi, Yefri Amuowi, Asase Koko Ma. Yefri Amuowi means we are from Amuowi. We are from Amuowi. Asase koko ma, children ma, asase koko of the red earth, children of the red earth. In the Bono tradition and also in the Asante, which came from the Bono, there are two royal bloodlines. There's the Oyoko, in the Oyoko, Abusia or the Oyoko clan, a ruling clan. The Yoko clan, which has the clan totem or Achinebwa of the falcon. One line is called the Oyoko Koko. And then the other royal line is called the Oyoko Tuntun. Koko means red, and Tuntun means black. Oyoko Koko means the red Oyoko people, the red line of kings and queen mothers. Oyoko Tuntun means the black line of kings and queen mothers. That's in the Bono tradition, but also amongst the Asante. They have the red Oyoko and the black Oyoko. They're talking about skin color. There's a difference between the reds and the blacks, but they're not because some are mixed with crackers and some are not. They're talking about dark brown people with red undertones, dark brown people with black undertones. We show a picture of the Kanitu, the Nubians who were visiting Kemet. In the article, and you see some of them are black and some of them are red. And then in Kemet, you'll see some of them are black and some of them are red. We're talking about dark brown people with red undertones, dark brown people with black undertones. Somebody like Wesley Snipes would be considered a red or light skin compared to some of the people in Ghana. So he would be considered Koko or red. They would call him Koko. Because we think he's dark skin compared to some of us. If you compare his skin tone to, say, Denzel Washington or something, Denzel Washington looked light brown, Wesley looks dark brown. Denzel would be considered caw-caw or red, and Denzel, Wesley would be considered black. If Wesley went to some place in Ghana amongst the Dinka or Wolof, he would be literally called light skin. So that's what we're talking about. But it comes when they say, it's talking about skin color. When they talk about the Oyoko Tuntun and Koko, they're talking about the red skin, black skin. But there's also the earth, Asase Koko, the red earth. Then you have Asase Tuntun, the black earth. And when they say Asase Koko Ma, we are children of the red earth. They're talking about their skin color, and they're talking about the earth itself, because we're talking about the divinities that govern the earth mother and the kind of energy they have, the hot, dry energy of the red desert. It's a hot, dry, fiery kind of energy to the person, temperament, and so forth, and they manifest that through their skin. The cooler, fertile kind of energy of the black earth gives birth to people who have that kind of temperament. It's manifest through their skin. It's manifest through their behavior. So it's never been a question in our culture for people who are fully engaged in the practice or instinctively understand ancestral religion, even if they hadn't been engaged because we've been broken away and thrown into Christianity and Islam and other foolishness, but instinctively we understand, ancestrally we understand that when we saw Kemet and we saw Deshert, the black land and the red land, we understood that had to do with the people, it had to do with the nation, it had to do with the land, it had to do with the skin color. All of those things combined is based on cosmology. So we address that because a lot of people have misunderstood that. They either follow the whites and their offspring's foolish argument that has nothing to do with the skin of the people, or they say it just has to do with the nation itself, but it has nothing to do with the land. It doesn't have anything to do with anything else, and it has to do with everything. So let's go through that. Before we go forward, okay, I thought somebody had a question. Can you still hear me? Somebody said what happened, they didn't hear the sound. If somebody type something in the chat, make sure, I want to make sure everybody still can hear. All right. Okay, so you can hear. Okay, cool. All right, so let me run through. I want to make sure I didn't miss any. And by the way, the guest calling number is 657-383-0635. And we are going to take some calls. We just want to go through the document right quick. Finish this information, give some clarification. The document is kind of self-explanatory to a certain extent, but we want to give some clarity before we take the call. So let's get through that. So we went through the piece dealing with the difference between the blacks and the reds. We go into a little bit more explanation in that. And then this particular document, what we did was we excerpted from our book, our text, Kukutuntun, the Ancestral Jurisdiction. Starting on it's around page, I believe, 55, where we're going into detail about the story of Osar, Aset, and Heru. First, we talk about who Osar, Aset, Heru, Set, Nebehet, different divinities are. We talk about the whole story. We talk about how it relates to us physically, the different organs they operate through the body and how they interact. We show how that whole story operates through the phases of the sun, through the phases of the moon, through the earth changes, through us spiritually, the different aspects of our spiritual anatomy. So on every level, physically, spiritually, earth, sun, moon, and in the stellar region, on every level, the whole story plays out with all of the characters. Then we also, finally, we show how Osar, Aset, Heru, Set, and Nebehet operate through the lives and events that shape our true story as Afurakani, Afurakani people. The same forces in nature that animate us and cause us to operate and interact with one another in a certain fashion. You know, when some people, just on a basic level, some people are very fiery and talkative and extroverted. Some people are cool and introverted and contemplative and so forth. Well, Afurakani, Afurakaitni people, we can tell which people are governed by which divinities, and of course their character is going to naturally manifest that kind of character because they're governed by an energy complex that motivates them to operate in a certain way. It just comes natural to them. It's the same thing with nation of people. And it's also the same with, you know, different nations of Afurakani, Afurakaitni people. And when we engage with non-Afurakani, Afurakaitni people who have no connection with any divinities at all, it's no different than the cells in your body when they begin to interact with free radicals, parasites, or cells that were once normal but have become disfigured, have become cancerous, and now all they do is seek to consume and destroy the other cell. Just like that happens internally within the physical body, it also happens with regard to our interaction with other entities, including the whites and their offspring, non-black people who are parasites within the body of black humanity and seek to consume and destroy everything in their path, and that's what they've done ever since they spilled out of Europe, and that's what they will continue to do until we make them extinct. That's the only thing that will stop them. So we show how Asar, Aset, Heru, Set, and Nebihet, and Tehuti and the different Abosom divinities operate the lives and events that take place within the clans of Apurakani, Apurakaitini people. When we talk about Asar, the great black king, is murdered by Set, who is often depicted as red, then we're showing that the Apurakani, Apurakaitini people, this is what our ancestresses and ancestors were showing, the great black nation. Remember, Kam Ur, the great black, is not just the great black individual, but it's also the great black nation. Was destroyed by misguided desire operating within a small portion of black people controlled by lust, and a large group of reddish or white foreigners from the desert of Eurasia who were their followers. Now, let's first deal with that. The whites and their offspring were invading ancient Kemet for centuries, actually for millennia. They typically were unsuccessful. They were not powerful enough to just come in and take over. That was true in ancient Kemet. That was true even in West Apuraka, Apuraikai, during the enslavement process. White people didn't just roll up in West Apuraka, Apuraikai, beat us up and drag us kicking and screaming to the Western Hemisphere, and we were praying to our gods and goddesses, and they just weren't answering, and the white god was better, and they just took us. That never happened. The whites and their offspring attempted to invade. They were not strong enough to do so. So they had to ally and wait for us to engage in civil war. See different groups that were at war with one another even before the whites and their offspring showed up. Very often some of our people were at war with one another because some of our people had embraced some aspects of Islam and some of our people didn't, so that created conflict. Now you had internal warfare between black groups. Some would embrace that nonsense, some who didn't. You also had some groups who were dominating other groups because they were drunk off of power and they just wanted to be dominant. Very often they got that idea, that whole mode of operation from being interacting with the Negroes who had become Muslims in the North, because people who were disgruntled, they didn't like leadership, and they saw some foreigners coming from the outside. That was their only chance to take the leadership down. If they could unite with them and take the leadership down, then they could move forward. White people sitting on the coast of West Apuraka, Apuraikai, they were not able militarily to take over any of those nations, and they didn't. They didn't take over the nations until the late 12,800s, or what we would call the late 1800s. 1870s, 1880s, 1890s, that's when the Europeans began to take over these nations. They were there from the early or the late so-called 1400s, or 12,400. We don't use 1990, 2000, and so forth because we don't date our time period back to a fictional character who never existed, Jesus. We use the calendar based on the Apeketie, 26,000-year cycle. We're in the midst of that. This is the year 13,014, so that's why we use the proper terminology. They have been there since the 12,400s or 1400s, late 1400s. They were not able to take over certain areas until the late 1800s, 1880s, 1870s, and so forth. That means during the entire period of the enslavement of our people, white people were not controlling any of those nations in West Apuraka, Apuraika. The people were still ruling themselves. But when they were capturing prisoners of war, instead of killing them like they would normally do, or instead of forcing them to work or sending, killing as many as possible, they had a new option now. There were crackers on the coast who said, "We will purchase your prisoners of war from you, and we will exchange them for guns and other commodities." So now they would, some of the people who were criminal would sell the people to the whites and their offspring. Now, that doesn't mean that black people were enslavers and white people are off the hook. There are black people right now who sell drugs. 99% of black people in America do not sell drugs. Less than 1% do sell drugs. That doesn't mean black people in America are drug dealers. That means less than 1% of black people in America are drug dealers. About one out of every 100,000 cells in your body is cancerous right now, but your immune system typically kills those cancer cells and destroys them. But you have some cancerous cells in your body, but you don't have cancer because you're not cancer-ridden because you have an immune system. We have people in the community who are parasitical. We typically contain those individuals. We've always contained them. That's why we were able to maintain civilization. When the whites and their offspring showed up, after hundreds of years of trying to make inroads and couldn't make inroads, they would just wait for us to be engaged in civil war. They would side with those who were the cancerous types, and together they would, you know, sometimes try to wage war against the black empires, but they were typically unsuccessful. For example, when the British waged war against the Asante, numerous wars, and they lost all of those wars except for the last one. And the only reason they won the last one against the Asante is because the Asante had fallen to civil conflict and were engaged in a civil war, so they were fighting each other at that point. And then internally, and then the white Khmer offspring attacked them externally. Just like that happened in West Africa, they wait for the disgruntled as well as people to fall into civil war, and then they arm both sides of the conflict, and then they side with the weaker group and try to attack the greater group, or they capture the prisoners of war and take those prisoners and sell them off. They did the same thing in ancient Kemet. They weren't able to take over, so if there were people on the outskirts of the nation, in the desert areas of the nation, they would try to ally with them, especially if some of those people were trying to raid ancient Kemet every now and then. So those people, some of those people were in the desert regions of Kemet, black people living in the desert regions outside of Kemet, on the frontier, some in Kanit, so-called Nubia, some in Libya, and so forth. The whites and their offspring trying to settle near the centers of civilization sometimes would try to ally with those people or try to identify with those people. So since they were living in the desert, the whites came from the deserts of Eurasia. They were used to living in the desert. But because the blacks were worshiping the divinity Set, as well as all the other divinities as well, but Set was prominent, and he's the owner of the desert, then the white people say, okay, we're up under Set as well. That doesn't mean that Set accepted the whites and their offspring. Of course, he did not. No divinity embraced the whites and their offspring, never have and never will. But they pretend like they're followers of Set, which, of course, they are not. So they first allied with those who were disgruntled with Kemet and tried to wage war against Kemet with them. But then once Kemet falls at some point, then they attack the ones that they had allied with in the beginning, and now the whites and their offspring are in control. That's what happened with the Greeks and then the Romans and so forth. It happened previously with the Assyrians and the Persians and then the Greeks and then the Romans and then the Arabs. So when we talk about there were some black people attacking Kemet, there were times when Hanit and Kemet or Nubia and Egypt, they were fighting one another. There were times when they were together. The times when they were fighting one another, the whites and their offspring would try to latch on to those who were fighting Kemet and try to attack that way. So that's what we're talking about. But eventually, the whites and their offspring took over and attacked everybody. That's the way they move. So you have the great black nation, Kam-Ur, Al-Sar, the great black king. This is the great black nation. The reddish ones, first you're talking about the real red, certain Nubian groups, Hanitu, but then the Eurasians, the reddish, ruddy people who have no skin. There's a difference between a dark brown person with red undertones, like a Maasai person. We can legitimately call them red, or one of the Oyoko Kokol in our Akan culture, the red Oyoko line, because they're dark brown with red undertones. The difference between them, the real red, and then the whites and their offspring who are devoid of skin color, so you can see the blood rushing through their cheeks and they're just red and ruddy and degenerate. But they would identify themselves as red because they're pinkish. So we talk about the followers, people from the deserts of Eurasia. It started off with some of the real reds in conflict with some of the reds within Kemet as well as the blacks within Kemet. But then the fake reds coming on later, the ruddy Europeans, waging war as well. So now you have the red ones attacking the great black nation. And they say Set killed Al-Sar, put him in a coffin, threw him in the river. So we're talking about the reddish group taking the great black group, putting them in a coffin, ship of enslavement and throwing them in the water. And then the reds take over where they're at. Now, we go through that whole process. It says the white foreigners then take control of the black nations, create unlawful rules and regulations. Of course, that's what happened when the whites and offspring took over. Offset is forced out of her role as queen and goes to search for her husband. This is the remnant of black people who were forced out of their countries, yet survived the wars and escaped slavery. These Akura Kanu Afrai Kaitin would search for their sisters and brothers who are still in bondage. Some of our people who were enslaved escaped enslavement, the Maroon societies and so forth. But then they would try to come back out of the swamps and the forests, and they would try to reconnect with the people who were still on the plantations and help to liberate them. So it would say these Afura Kanu Afrai Kaitin would search for their sisters and brothers who were still in bondage. Offset finds the body of Ossar, performs ritual, communicates with his spirit, and becomes pregnant. The Afura Kanu Afrai Kaitin, who had escaped slavery, would find their sisters and brothers on the plantations and seek to unite with them and build alliances with them to plan for freedom from the white slavers. So some of our people escaped enslavement. They set up Maroon villages. It didn't just happen in Jamaica. It didn't just happen in Haiti. It didn't just happen in South America. It also happened in North America. In different parts of the southeastern United States and up into the north, we escaped enslavement and established independent nations. For example, Dismal Swamp. At one point, there was over 2,000 black people living there who had freed themselves from enslavement. They were armed. It was to the point where the whites could not defeat them, so they started trying to trade with them. So they had their own nation in that area, in Virginia, South Carolina area. Now, some of those who escaped, they would go back, find their brothers and sisters on the plantation. Offset will come back and find the great black one, Ossar. The great black one was still on the plantation. He was still dead. He was preserved on the plantation, on the cotton plantation. The great black one laid out on the plantation, the great black nation laid out on the plantation, mummified or bound with white cotton bandages. This is Ossar mummified, a great black nation bound and preserved in the cotton fields. That means they still exist. They're sustained in the cotton fields, but they're bound. There's a potential for resurrection because they still exist, but this great black nation is bound up in the white bandages of the cotton fields of America. Offset comes to unite with the great black dead one. She unites, eventually gives birth to Heru. So when we show the pictures, we show Kam'ur, the great black nation, mummified in white bandages, meaning cotton fields, as a spiritually, culturally dead people. We were preserved, mummified, bound in cotton, just as Ossar is bound in white cotton bandages. The grain growing from the dead body of Ossar, we show a picture of that, is grain growing from his body. It's Ossar in the cotton fields of the west, Amenti, the dead land. The western land in ancient Kemet was called Amenti, the dead land, or Amentet, the land of the setting sun, where the sun sets and goes into the ground. That's the west. That's the term for west is Ament. Term for dead land is Ament. We're in the west. This is where the sun sets, and this is where the great black nation was laid out, bound, mummified in bandages, dead, but had the potential for resurrection. So you see that mummified body of Ossar, the grain growing out of his body, there's a ritual being performed, there's a process of resurrection about to occur. Offset becomes pregnant. She gives birth to Heru. She unites, so Offset connects with Ossar. His spirit connects with her. She becomes pregnant. This is where they get the Immaculate Conception of the God impregnating the Great Mother, and she gives birth to the son who will become the one who defeats the rule of Set, which was corrupted into Set-En or Satan. So we go into all of that in the Kukulcan-Zoom. And the next part we talk about, the God Tehuti tells Offset that her son will grow up to defeat Set, and she must hide away in the swamps to raise Heru away from the seat of government. So that relates to Afura Kani Afurai Kaini, people who escaped slavery, set up their own sovereign independent nations, the Maroon nations in the swamps and forests and mountains away from plantations. We gave birth to children who would grow to become those who would defeat the rule of the white slave. Set finds out about Heru's birth and has him killed. The white slavers against the Afura Kani Afurai Kaitin males today, and females, creating drugs, diseases, which we destroy ourselves with and maintain the white rule. Offset and Nebuchadnezzar, and let's look at that episode. There's an episode when she gives birth to Heru, she goes into the swamps, in the marshes, in the delta, in northern Kemet, to hide the baby away from Set, because Set is ruling. and she was impregnated, and they said that, Set knew that if Heru would grow up, that he was going to take over, so that he was trying to kill Heru. She hid Heru in the swamps and forests, in the delta, in the marshes, in northern Kemet. So we're in North America. The Maroon societies in North America. We're hiding out in the north. We escaped from the plantations. We're hiding, having the children who will become revolutionaries later to overthrow the rule of the whites and their offspring. In the episode, Set, one of his associates, in the form of scorpions, finds the baby Heru in the marshes and stabs him with the pointer, with the stinger, and then Heru dies. Then Aset comes and finds Heru dead, and she picks him up and begins to lament, begins to cry. And then Nebehet comes along, her sister, and finds that Heru has died, and then they begin to lament as well. This is the aspect of the story when Heru, one of the Heru deities is Khensu Neferhotep Heru, which is a different deity from Heru, son of Osar, Aset. They're both hawk-headed divinities. They both look identical except for their headdress. Khensu Heru was corrupted into Khensu, Yeshua, Jesus, and Jesus. Jesus is a fictional character. They're talking about Khensu, the son of Amen and Mut. But that title, Khensu, means divine royal child. It's a title associated with Khensu Neferhotep Heru, as well as Heru, son of Osar and Aset. So when they find Heru, when a set scorpion finds Heru, he kills him. He stabs him. He dies. Aset finds Heru is dead. She picks up her son's body and starts to lament. Her sister Nebehet comes in. She laments as well. Then another female Abosom, Serket, a scorpion divinity, comes and says, listen, you need to call on Ra. And they call on Ra, who's sailing through the boat of the sun in the sky. Ra stops the boat and sends Tahuti down. Tahuti, the divine wisdom, comes down, talks to Aset, helps with the process of resurrecting Heru, and then Heru is resurrected. This is where they get the story of the two Marys, Aset and Nebehet, are related to the goddesses of the inundation, Merit Shema, or Merit of the south, and Merit of the north. So the two Marys are lamenting over the death of the Khensu, or the Jesus, the Jesus. And then the God sends the angel Gabriel down to say, Marys, don't you weep, so to speak. And he's resurrected, and the whole piece. This is where they get that whole scene from. So we talk about that with when Heru is killed, one of Set's associates stabs Heru. The young Herus and Herit, the males and females who will become the revolutionaries, who will overthrow Set and the rule of Set. Set's associates, so to speak, come and kill the young Heru, the young Herit, the young revolutionaries. So our young men, males and females, are being killed, drugs, diseases, gun violence, all the things we need to kill ourselves, all the guns, all the drugs and so forth, come directly from the whites and their offspring. They flood our communities with marijuana. A lot of fools think that's, natural and from the earth and so forth. It destroys your abatum. It destroys your melanin. It destroys your sperm cells. It disfigures sperm cells. Disfigures ovum cells. Disrupts lactation for females. Sets people up to have asthma. Of course, it leads to lung cancer. There's more carcinogens and marijuana smoke than in regular cigarette smoke. Of course, they put out the propaganda that it's nothing wrong with it, and they want to flood our communities with it and legalize it because they want a nation of zombies walking around. They want something that attacks the melanin of the people. So they foolishly make us beg them to legalize it so that we can be a nation of zombies. So they flood our communities with drugs, marijuana, cocaine, heroin, and so forth, ecstasy, crystal meth and all this other nonsense that's now getting into the black communities as well. Guns, drugs, diseases, everything they need, everything we need to kill ourselves, they're destroying us. This is Set's associates coming to kill the young Heru who will be the revolutionary. Aset and Nebehet find Heru murdered and lament his death. The mothers of Afurakani Afuraikaini males as well as females lament as they bury their children daily as a result of violence, drugs, and diseases created by the white. The goddess Serket tells Osset to call on Ra. Ra sends Tahuti to call the resurrection of Heru. That means we are reminded by our ancestresses and ancestors that our liberation is only possible through the invocation of the goddesses and gods. We begin to invoke Ra and Ra'et for the first time in thousands of years for some people and hundreds of years for other people. The spirits of the goddesses and gods and the sons and daughters of Afurakanu, Afuraikaitu begin to wake up or resurrect. Heru with Heru Behudet, the son of Ra, defeat Set and establish divine order in the world. So that means the children of those who are captured and enslaved away from Afuraka, Afuraikai are uniting with Heru Behudet, the son of Ra, the children of those who were colonized in Afuraka, Afuraikai, and are defeating the whites and their offspring and their false religions and their perverse culture for good. And then they talk about Asar, Aset, Nebehet, Heru, resurrect Asar, and Asar joins Ra in heaven as the god in nature. The children of those Afurakanu, Afuraikaitnut, who were separated from Afuraka, Afuraikai, began to invoke the spirits of the ancestresses and ancestors who come forth and openly exercise their jurisdiction over the lives of their children. So we just show in that section how the entire story of Asar, Set, and Heru not only operates, can be seen within our physical bodies, our spiritual anatomy, earth changes, the phases of the moon, the phases of the sun, the stellar movement. We talk about Aset Sapatit and Asar Sa, meaning Orion, and Aset operating through Sapatit of Sirius, and Heru operating through Heru in Sapatit, or Heru in the Sirius constellation, and so forth. We go into all of that and how, you know, Solomon and Sheba and Menelik are fictional characters. But it doesn't only operate through that, but it also operates through the lives and events. The Abosom animate us. We animated by them, we interact with one another in a similar fashion because of the energy complex that we have. The same thing with animal life, plant life, mineral life, and Afurakani, Afuraikaitini, human life. So we go through all of that to show that these Abosom are directly connected to us. They're directly connected to our story right here in America. We are not separate. We are not dependent upon Afurakanu, Afuraikaitini in America to reconnect with our ancestral culture or religion. These divinities, as shown in the story, not only govern how we are to lift ourselves from this condition, you see the story and you also see the outcome when we reconnect with the Abosom, when we reconnect with the Nsamafo. But it also shows that the culture is still with us. The Abosom are still connected to us. We still get possessed by the Abosom. We still communicate with them. We still utilize divinatory systems, systems of oracular divination that were given to us, that we carry with us into North America during the enslavement era, that have been given to us since we've been here. We are dependent on absolutely no one outside of ourselves to reconnect with our ancestral culture. So we're going to get into that as well, because Ojida, purification, is central to that. So let us open it up for some questions, and we're going to hit, let me see if we can get a caller in here. Okay, 4255. Okay, hello, 4255, Michelle, greetings.
What's going on, Quay?
Heads up, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, bro?
Hey, brother, how's everything?
Oh, everything's going good.
Okay.
Can you hear me good?
Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you clearly.
Okay, yeah, I'm just listening in.
Oh, you're just listening in? Okay. I'll,
yeah.
Okay, let me hit a... Okay. Let me look at 16:13. Michiawo, you on Ojirapo? On Ojira with Ojirapo? Okay, this is 16:13. Last four numbers, 16:13. In fact, if you want to ask, hold on one second. If you want to ask a question, why don't you type in your last four numbers in the chat, if you're on the chat, then I can know who's just holding and who wants to ask the question. Let's go to last four numbers, 2445, Michiamo.
Yeah, you can hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Hello. Michiamo, brother.
Okay, I want to know about, you know, what's the steps of reuniting, you know, with our ancestral spirits. You know, what about those who have been adopted, you know, that don't have connection with their ancestors in that way?
I'm listening. He clicked in on crazy.
Hello?
Hold on one second. Let me just make sure this line is Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, but somebody else's line is on too.
Okay, I got it. I'm just closing those out right quick. Okay, that's better. All right. So you had the question of what about if you were adopted and you didn't know who your people were?
Yeah.
Okay. So, good question. And this is actually is relevant to really to everybody, because even though some of us know our, you know, most recent you know, parents, grandparents, great-grandparents and so forth, most of us can't go back beyond a few generations. And when we're talking about the Nananum, Msamafo, Egungun, Kuvito, and so forth, ancestresses and ancestors, we're talking about those ancient ancestresses and ancestors who mastered life, whose names we don't know, we may not know at the particular time what specific ethnic group we incarnated from. Now, yes, we've been mixed up blood-wise on the boats, but as we say and as the Msamafo have said, and continuously remind us, the blood may be mixed, but the soul is not. You can't mix a soul. You're the same spirit that was previously living here on the continent of Afaraka, Afaraka, as part of a certain group. You made your transition. Your descendants have continued to perpetuate your blood circle. Generations down the line, your spirit reincarnates through one of your descendants, and you come back into the world. Because of blood mixture and rape and murder and enslavement, instead of reincarnating through descendants on the continent, maybe some of your descendants were taken to America and you reincarnate through them and through one in particular. And because of the blood mixture and the murder and the rape and so forth, now we're lighter brown and we incarnate through a lighter brown body because of what happened. But we're the same spirit that was living in Ghana, living in the Oyo Empire, living in Dahomey or whatever, wherever we were at, the same spirit. We have a lighter brown body this time, but we're the same spirit. We're connected to the same clan we were hundreds of years ago. So all of us have that question. We can, you can establish an ancestral shrine. On our website, we have a couple of articles, Nkomre, Ancestral Shrine Communication, Nsama Nkomre, Ancestral Shrines in Kemet, Nsama Nkom, and the seven senses, and we also have a few videos. So when you go on the website, you can go to our ojirapo.com website. We typically recommend that people listen to the Kuku Tum Tum first, read the Uben Shang at least once. You don't have to memorize it. look at the Wabo Jira, and these are all in order on the website. It's step by step. When you go to the front page of the website, you scroll through the index, and then we have the link for the videos, link for the publications, link for public speaking engagements and schedule, and then we have the link for the self-study curriculum, and it's step-by-step. Starts with Kukudunsung, then Ubin Shang, then Wabo Jida, then Nana Soma Homa. Step-by-step to study that. And then once you get to the Nana Soma Homa, you'll see that we have a piece on ancestral shrine communication. We also included in that, we have a link to a ritual prayer from the language of ancient Kemet that any of our people can use because all of us are connected to ancient Kanit and Kemet, ancient Nubian Egypt in some fashion. All the various groups on the continent are connected genetically as well as linguistically, culturally, and spiritually to that ancient culture. So if you don't know what language you and ethnic group you come from, the foundational culture and language is that of ancient Kemet, so you can use those terms, and you'll find those terms in the various Niger-Congo languages and so-called Nilo-Saharan languages and so forth across the continent. So it's like a foundational language you can use. We have a simple prayer, libation, in the language of Kemet with explanations, translations, as well as an audio link so you can listen to it. You can use that simple prayer, establish a shrine to communicate, and your ancestresses and ancestors are with you now, and they will communicate with you, and they will show you who they are. So if you send us an email, and I can direct you to the specific links, and I'll put my email address in the chat. Okay, I'll put it in the chat, and for those who are not on the chat, just listening by phone, just go to the ojirafo.com website, O-D-W-I-R-A-F, as in free, O.com, and then you can go to the contact us section if you need, you know, the specific links, directions of the specific links, but we do lay them out step by step. And you can establish a basic ancestor shrine, and once you begin that process of purification and then communication, your people will communicate with you. They've been communicating with you. They communicate in different ways. We show that in the Samayin Koma and the Seven Senses, different ways they communicate. But you want a more optimal communication. So setting aside a space, specific space, and time, and a manner in which you go and communicate with them, it doesn't have to be an elaborate shrine or anything like that. We show the basic elements to put together to establish a shrine. You do not have to have it consecrated by a so-called priest or priestess. You don't have to have somebody communicate to your Nsamapo for you. You have ancestresses and ancestors who are assigned to you pre-incarnation that you come into the world with, just like you have Abosom or Orisha Vodou assigned to you by the Supreme Being pre-incarnation who you come into the world with. So nobody can give you a divinity. Nobody can give you an ancestor and ancestress. You come into the world with that. No matter where black people are on earth, we are born with that. So you don't have to have an elaborate shrine. You can just, so we show a basic shrine set up and the nature and function of ancestry, communication, our relationship with the divinities, and things like that. You get that information up front with the Kukutuntum and Ubin Shang and so forth. And then the details about establishing a shrine, you can move forward like that. And they will give you specifics about who you are. They give you specifics and direction about where to go and research if you're interested in genealogy and things like that. They'll put people in front of you after you do your communication, put you on that right track, as well as learning what specific ancestral clan you come from.
Okay, what about if someone in prison wanted to, you know, establish this? You know, could it be done? And
yeah, they can do that. Now, I mean, of course, you would have to, you know, you can get the information to them. Different prisons have different protocols about what kind of books they can send or if they have staples in them and stuff like that. So you can find out exactly what kind of, some of them only receive books from, you know, publishers or stores, and they don't allow people to send, individuals to send books to people anymore. You know what I'm saying? So you can find out what the criteria is if you wanted to have some books shipped to a prison. We do have soft cover versions of 7 of our publications, so we could do that. But they can engage that hojira, that self-purification process, right there. They don't have to establish, an elaborate shrine. If they're in that situation, they can just take time out when they're alone and do that. They can communicate. Because when you sit in front of the ancestral shrine, that's where the whole idea of meditation came from. So, in fact, we have 2 articles, one called Ankh, the origin of the term yoga, where we show linguistically, etymologically, and cosmologically that the word Ankh or Yonk is where they get the term Yonk in Indo-European languages, in Yonka or Yoga in English or whatever. We show that, and then we have another article, Kara, Kasa, the origin and nature of the chakra. The chakra or the Kakra comes from Kara, Kara, from ancient Kemet. So we show that whites and their offspring in the East, they learned about these terms and ritual practices from our people. And, of course, they corrupted them and manufactured a pseudo-discipline, and they're just doing gymnastics, basically, with no spiritual foundation. But that whole notion of meditation comes from we would sit and communicate with our ancestresses and ancestors, sit and communicate with the Abosom, sit and communicate, meaning the forces of nature, the deities, goddesses and gods, and communicating with our own Kra, our own divine consciousness, the force in nature that dwells in our head region, our own personal divinity, which is the key to all ancestral religion. So a person who's incarcerated, that Abosom dwelling within their head, that force in the head that pulls you to move in the right direction at all times, whether you follow it or not, they can sit down and communicate with that force in nature to realign themselves on a consistent basis, keep themselves strong, keep themselves focused, build up that endurance to last, you know what I'm saying, connect with their insumafo, even when they fall asleep and dream about them. We have ancestresses and ancestors who lasted through enslavement, who were taken, put in chains on boats for months and forced to be enslaved and work for the whites and offspring for years until they could free themselves. We don't have to tell a person, well, brother, you're strong, you got the ability, you can do whatever. It's reality. You tell them about their true story. We are the ones who survived all that. Some of our people didn't survive, and therefore they didn't have kids. But the ones who survived are the ones who had children. So we are living evidence of people who have the capacity to endure anything because we actually exist. The ones who went through the most horrific situation or event and survived are the ones who had children. And of course, the people who are incarcerated are descended from the people who survived. So if our ancestors, our direct blood ancestresses and ancestors were able to survive enslavement, then of course we have the capacity to do the same thing. So yes, somebody incarcerated can do that.
Okay, one last question I wondered, like, could someone block a person from their ancestor spiritually, like using voodoo or hoodoo or, you know, juju, anything of that nature? Could they actually interfere with a person, you know, spiritual connection?
Well, let me give two responses. One, we also have an article, the Akan origin of the term hoodoo. So hoodoo is a term that comes from medicine, basically, in Akan tradition. So when you talk about hoodoo, it's an Akan term, and often the black people in America who say we practice hoodoo, very often they were Akan people, and they continued that practice. People would say we practice voodoo, they were typically Fone people or Ebe people or Mina or people in that group because that's a Fone Ebe term. The juju is a Yoruba term, so that means the Yoruba people who were enslaved in America who were Yoruba people, or related people, they were using the term juju. So often what you're having, when you hear somebody say, yeah, my ancestresses and ancestors in Alabama or Mississippi were practicing juju, they don't realize it, saying, well, my people were Yoruba. If they said they were practicing voodoo, they were saying, well, actually, my people were Akan, or people, you know, practicing voodoo. They were saying my people were, Fon, Ebe, and so forth. So these are legitimate, these are actual traditions. So when people say, I'm going to do some juju on you, that's just a misappropriation of terms. Now, when it comes to people sending negative spirits to people, people have the capacity to do that just like physically. Somebody can send a crackhead to somebody and eavesdrop on them, or send a crackhead to somebody and try to rob them. They'll pay them some money and they'll go do it. And if somebody, that kind of spirit dies, they'll promise that spirit they'll make a sacrifice for them if they go and, listen in and see what the person is talking about or try to invade the person's dreams or whatever. And they will do it. And they'll do it, and the person that do a sacrifice for them, a blood sacrifice, just to give them that rush of energy, just like when they were alive, they would give them crack or money to get crack because they just want that rush of energy, not because it's doing anything for them. It's just a rush of energy, and they're addicted to it. So people can do that just like they could send somebody to you and try to disrupt you physically. However, you have the capacity, just like you have the capacity to fight off a crackhead or you have the capacity to, repel somebody, you have the capacity to knock that down. You have ancestors. You have, I'm also connected to you. Typically, you can easily dispense with that when somebody's trying to do something if you're focused and if you're not out of harmony yourself. That's why, again, purification, Ojita and Akujita, self-purification is key, even just on a basic level. If not, when you engage in disordered activity, just like if you eat different kinds of foods or do drugs or something like that, you lower your immunity, and then microbes and things that normally will bounce right off you without effort, they'll cause you problems, and you'll be sick, bedridden, and everything else. If you lower your spiritual immunity through a couple of things, one, engaging in disordered activity, that you're a cry, and you're both someone and some mafo, don't want you to engage in criminal-type activity, lustful-type activity, and so forth. And when you do that, you pull yourself away from that kind of protection. And then, yeah, parasites can get in. Parasitical spirits, just like a parasitical microbe, can get in when your immunity is low. You strengthen your immunity through purification and through adhering fundamentally with divine order. The other thing is fear. Just like physically, fear can lead to stress. Stress leads to physical problems, and then you lower your immunity. Fear does the same thing spiritually. You get out of harmony with order. It's not harmonious to be fearful. So if you get gripped by fear and you start rejecting the direction that your akra is pulling you in and rejecting the direction your insamapo is pulling you in because you're fearful, then you lose that connection. You become disaligned. And then again, your immunity is low, and then some fool can just send some little weak spirit and cause interference in somebody's dreams or during the day or different things like that. But once you engage in just a basic ritual realignment, you can repel them with ease, just like when you get enough sleep, eat basic natural food, drinking alcohol and all this other nonsense and smoking. When you get all that kind of stuff out of your system and just on a basic level, your immunity is normal, and somebody can be in the house coughing all over you, and they have the flu, and you don't get the flu, you're not trying to repel the virus. Your immune system is strong enough where it just repels it, so it's not a problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you're going to, elaborate more on about the purification later on the show, right?
Yeah, well, now we got like 12 minutes left. We're going to be doing the show every week, but the elaboration would be actually, you can look at, we have publications that deal with that in detail, and then we have videos that deal with that in detail. So you can look at the videos from the beginning, the Nana Som Ne Amamre, the first three as far as 1, 2, and 3 on our YouTube page. It says Nana Som Ne Amamre Part 1, Part 2, and Part 3. And then we have videos on the Akradin Bosom, the deities of the days of the week, and all of that. We have a number of different videos, but we go into that. One that deals specifically with purification is, like I said, when you go to the first page of the website, Kukutuntum, Ubin Sheng, and Wabojida. Wabojida is dealing with purification. And then the Okra complex, let me type that in the chat real quick. Qur'an Complex, The Soul of Our Consul, that book has a specific Akra Gwari or self-purification ritual process.
Okay. All this is being recorded, so it would be, you know, easy to put it back up.
Yes, so once the show is over, it doesn't take long before the show is available to download. So it might not even take a half an hour. And then the show, you know, you'll be able to just go to the website, go to the Blog Talk Radio show, click on it, download, and re-listen to the whole show. Okay, and the brother just, okay, so we're going to get another call. Mirase, appreciate it. Thank you for the call.
Yeah, I appreciate
you. We're going to go to the next call. Mirase. Okay, and before we say that, Mirase Kamal for reminding me, 12 minutes left in the show, right? So, well, actually, 10 minutes left in the show online. If you call in 657-383-0635, if we go into overtime, the two-hour show will cut off in less than 10 minutes. If you want to continue to listen, then you can call on 657-383-0635, and then you can continue to listen on the phone because online the show will go off. But it'll continue, and we can do a little bit of overtime if you have a few more questions people want to want to be answered. We can do that. Okay, so you only got 9.5 minutes to call 657-383-0635. Okay, so next caller, Michiawo, you're on with Ojira Fold. The last four numbers is 1500. Okay, let's go to, okay, it's 1500 there. Okay, you just listening? All right. Go to, we're going to go to 1772, Michiawo. This 1772, you on? Okay, you just listening, 1772?
Yeah, I'm just listening.
Okay. That's it.
Ta-da.
Okay, we're gonna go to okay, we're gonna go to 8732, Michiawo. Last four numbers, 919, area code. Okay, just listening. Let's go to 5856.
Same.
Okay. 5856, you just listening?
I don't think you're here. I don't want to move it.
Hello?
Yes, but just listen.
Okay, just listen. All right. It's at Mirase. Okay, we're going to go down to 8732. You have a question or a comment, Michiawo? Okay, just listen as well.
Easy.
Okay, how about, hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes, this is 8732.
237.
Okay.
I'm not even sure if I'm hearing you.
Okay, no, you're through. It was another number that was 8732 above yours, but this is 8237? Okay.
Yeah, this is Kwaku from Hartford.
Michelle, what's up? How's everything?
Everything good, brother. How you doing?
I'm good.
All right, likewise. Just wanted to find out a question on the so-called, what they said about the, I was with the Moors for a while, and they always spoke about the elves and the angels and stuff like that, Mikael, Gabriel, and all that. I wanted to find out what was the fullness on that.
Okay. All right, so when you look at Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Hebrewism, and their so-called esoteric forms, and then so-called esoteric, so exoteric and esoteric, really no difference in reality. What they typically would use as a model, so you have, for example, you have Amen, Amenet, the great father and the great mother, and Akan is Nyame, Nyamewa, of course, and Vodun is Lisa Mawu, and so forth.
Right.
The creator and creatress, Ra and Riot. You have other divinities that are subordinate to them as well. The various Abosom or Ntoru, Ntorotu, or Netaru, Netatu, but Ntoro, Ntorotu. The forces in nature like Asar and Aset and Set and Nebehed and the various ones. They use those as models to manufacture these so-called angels, whether it's Islam, Christianity, Judaism, Sephiroth, and all these other entities. Descriptive titles and names from the divinities of ancient Kemet to manufacture these characters. However, just because they use the titles and descriptive titles and sometimes the actual titles and sometimes descriptive titles to manufacture the names for these characters, they're not dealing with the actual divinities. What they're dealing with is discarnate white people who died, and they're passing them off as deities.
All right.
So somebody's dead grandfather, dead grandmother, dead uncle, dead whoever, they'll say, well, this is the deity, Mikael or whatever, and that cracker who's dead will say that they're Mikael. They'll say that they're Jesus. The cracker who enslaved our people and raped, you know, one of the sisters and created a mulatto child, and that child grew up and, you know, generations down the line, they had children. If they're not just have a basic fundamental level of divine hate or repulsion for the whites and their offspring, that cracker spirit will try to show up in dreams or show up if they were trying to do a ritual and they'll see a white man with a beard and long hair and a mustache. And if they were going back and forth to church, they'll say, well, I just saw Jesus. And they'll ask him, are you Jesus? And he'll say, yeah, I'm Jesus. That's how a lot of people, our receptive people get caught up, because they go to church and they say, well, Jesus came to me, literally, he came to me in my living room, and he told me who he was, and he had long hair, and he did have long hair and all that, and he will lie and say he's Jesus. And these discarnate spirits will say that they're angels and all this other stuff. They're just dead crackers, dead, discarnate, disordered entities. Some of them, with regard to black people, are the discarnate relatives and sometimes non-relatives of those black people who had allied with the whites and their offspring, those black people who had allied with the enemy. They were no different than, when we talked about this before at a different presentation, but if somebody's gangbangers on the corner and they shoot somebody, somebody gets murdered, one of the brothers gets murdered. His spirit is still hanging around the place where his blood went into the earth. He's earthbound. He's disturbed. He's hanging around. And his spirit will go, and the brothers who are still hanging out on the corner following every day and every month and year and so forth, they hang out on the same corner, and he will go and whisper in their ears. Okay, just for, there was a quick message we got. About a minute left, so those who want to continue to listen, you're going to have to call in 657-383-0635 because the on-air live version of the show will be shut down in a minute. But earthbound spirits who are wayward, didn't make a transition to the ancestral realm, they're still hanging out, they will encourage the people who are still on the corner, shoot this person, kill this person, do this, do that, and people have an overwhelming urge to kill somebody. And they'll do it. And then somebody will ask them, why did you do it? They say, I don't know, I just felt like I wanted to do it. It's the same thing with people who have become Muslims and allied with the whites and their offspring, and they died. These are discarnate, wayward, uncultivated spirits that are still hanging out, didn't make a good transition, smooth transition to the ancestral realm. They're earthbound, and many of them were criminal and allied with the whites and their offspring because they were criminal and lustful and malicious. Negro spirits from back in the day, the original Negroes. So these Moors and other people, they are invoking and evoking these individuals. They call them the Elohim and the angels and all this other nonsense, and the only spirits that are coming to them are either deceased white people who are engaged in Islam and that foolishness, or criminal, deceased black people who were involved in Islam or who were involved in Judaism or whatever, and those perverse, discarnate, uncultivated spirits are coming to them. They'll tell them something that other people are thinking, what's going to happen, and then it happens, and they're like, oh, this must be the real thing because these spirits are communicating with me. They're dealing with criminal-type spirits. No different than a criminal on the street who gets killed. They're dealing with them, and they're pouring libation to them, and they're doing rituals to them, and they think they're doing Enochian magic and all kind of nonsense, and they're not doing anything. They're doing nothing. They're drug addicts. They promote that as spiritual. When you engage in drug use, you draw the kind of negative spirits that are earthbound and criminal to you. You draw disordered spirits to you. If you're drinking alcohol, doing drugs, engage in criminality and lustful type spirits, those are the kind of entities you would draw to you. You would be repulsive to those who are harmonious, and you will be on the same frequency, just like a radio station. When you tune to the same frequency, everybody on the frequency can hear everybody else, but you can't hear anybody else on the other frequency. When you engage in drug use and other kinds of corrupt behavior, then these are the kind of individuals and kind of frequency you're on and kind of spirits you draw to you. And they will pass those individuals off as Elohim and all kinds of nonsense. And this is why you have, on one hand, you have the criminal-type mindset. The whole Moorish paradigm is nonsense. We have an article, Moor Means Dead, where we break that whole thing down. So, of course, they're lying to our people. The people who are instructors in Moorish so-called science or whatever, they know what they're saying is inaccurate. That's why they're saying it. That's why they're promoting that nonsense. They promote the whites and their offspring. They are agents of the whites and their offspring. Then you have some people, young people, other people who just join up. They don't know anything about it, and they get involved, and they engage in that nonsense and that corrupt practice, and then they begin to draw in the same kind of spirits that these people direct them to do. They direct them to, you know, smoke weed and direct them to start rejecting who they are as Afura Kani, Afura Kaini people, and start saying you're not black, you're actually white, and all this other nonsense. And then when you get on that mindset and begin to repel your own people, repel anything Afura Kani, Afura Kaiten, you become repulsed by that. You don't want to have anything to do with it. You open the gateway for those criminal, uncultivated spirits to be attached to you and be open to you, and you're open to them, and then they can tell you anything. And they'll tell you, oh, you know, the black man came from Asia. And you'll say, the spirit said, we came from Asia. Oh, the black man came from Mu. And you'll say, the spirit said, we came from Mu. Yeah, spirit did say that, but what kind of spirit said that? That's the thing.
Exactly.
Now, in traditional culture, we know there's Nsamain Gong, evil, deceived spirits, and Nsamain Pa, which is good or harmonious. Spirits are like they're people who live in harmony with order here, and you have criminals. People who engage in traditional culture, that's common knowledge. Here, we're not typically engaged in traditional culture, unless we, you know, held on through hoodoo and voodoo and so forth. So whatever somebody tells people who engage in these organizations, they think it's the deepest thing, and they can run game on people like that. So that's what's going on with them.
Well, give thanks, because I always knew from the bottom of my heart that something wasn't right. And
right.
For right now, the only thing I do is just chant, Anyame, Anyame wa. And then there are certain, just certain little simple little character defects that got to get corrected. I don't know if it's being born on a Wednesday. So, I mean, that would mean that I'm set. So I want to be aligned with the Asarian energy, because I've always been spent, what, 7 years no sex, about 12 years strict vegetarian, but I almost died doing that. So,
okay.
Yeah, I really want to get back on the level where we want to find out the precise function that we're here for so that we could execute it, but I don't want it to be in any way, shape, or form going against my own by, like you say, going through these pseudo-religions. Because I've spent time with the Hindus, I've spent time with some Africans, I've spent time with a whole different lot of sets of just searching.
Right.
But
no, I understand.
Right,
so,
now,
go ahead,
brother.
No, I was just going to say the one thing that's key and which we, you know, want to constantly reinforce on Ojita on this program is that we don't have to look for a system. We were born into a clan. We incarnated from a clan, and we were born into a system. So we just have to restore the system that we are born as a part of. So that's why it's critical to communicate with your own direct blood ancestresses and ancestors through ritual ancestral communication. Communicate with your own kra and the abosom connected to you and reestablish that culture in your own blood circle. It's not about being dependent on anybody outside of us, including Afurakani, Afurakaitni people on the continent, going back and forth, spending thousands of dollars for initiations and readings and all this other nonsense. Your ancestors and ancestors were born into the world with you, connected to you. So that's the system you go to. So you go to them first. That's the primary institution of learning within ancestral religion or culture is the ancestral shrine. That's the institution where you get your information, and they will then direct you to other people who are credible, who confirm what they give you spiritually. So that way there's a check and balance on, you know, what you come in contact with after you communicate with them.
Yeah, Mom, I get you loud and clear, man. I'm much love.
I missed that last part. You said what now?
I said, I get you loud and clear. It's much love.
Oh, man. Merci. Merci.
Merci.
Appreciate it. Okay.
All right.
Okay. Let me say also, if you're still in the chat, and even for those who are not in the chat, we mentioned before, and maybe I'll say for posting the different links. We have, like we said before, we have the PDF versions of the books and the articles, and those are all free downloads. And then our services are free. When we do presentations in different cities, like the brother just called from Connecticut, we were in Connecticut a few months that we've been in Tennessee and Virginia, of course, D.C., Maryland, Chicago, Georgia, different places. Hold on 1 second. And I just wanted to say, those group presentations, they're also, presentations are also free. We don't charge people to come to our presentations, of course, admissions fee. We don't charge people who bring us out. We don't charge a speaker's fee to come out and speak. We're not charging people thousands of dollars or hundreds. We don't charge a speaker's fee to do a presentation. And then our services and so forth, dealing with substance abuse, abstinence, and those things you'll see on the website, those things are free as well. The only thing that we do sell cover versions of 7 of our books. The PDF versions, the e-books are free, but for those who want a soft cover version, You can go to the website, ojidafo.com/nhoma, nhoma.html for the people who are not still on the chat. And you can see the different soft cover versions we have. You can order them. We also have a program, the Noquatico Distributor Information Program, where you can become a distributor, you can be independent, your own entrepreneur, you can purchase the soft cover versions of our books wholesale, and then you can sell them and generate additional income for yourself or just work full-time for yourself. That's also on the Nhoma page of our website as well. So you can go check that out. That's a way to generate money for yourself, but also that's a way to support what we're doing here. Okay, let's get to another call. 1785, Michiawo. Greetings. Okay, 1785, you just listen. Okay. Okay, we're going to look at 1363, Michiawo. Okay. What about 2887?
What's up, Kwesi? This is Sal Rock.
What's up, brother? How's it going?
Hey, pretty good, pretty good. I just want to ask you two questions real quick. I guess the first one is relevant towards community building. So I was going to ask, you know, what was your progress or about, you know, community building moving forward to, you know, self-sustainability? You know, within our own community. You know, I say that because, you know, I just came from that event that they had at Howard University this Sunday. You know, they had their Confo, the Vodou, you know, the quote-unquote Kamau, and the Yoruba. And I can't really speak, and another South African, you know, religion that I was kind of new to. And I can't speak so much for the Confo and the Vodou, but I do know the folks who represent the Yoruba in the Kamau community, and, you know, I really don't find those people as being, you know, authentic, you know, representation of the culture. So when we went, you know, I took my wife and my kids, and, you know, they really enjoyed the culture, you know, the traditional evocations of the, you know, the ancestors and the deities, but just knowing some of the people who perpetrated that culture is just not, you know, it's not authentic. So, you know, and of course, you know, with myself, you know, I got the Ka of Aser or the, you know, the oil of Obatala. So, you know, I'm being more inclined and being more receptive to restoring my culture. And I've been, you know, very disciplined about, you know, doing such. And as I'm, you know, moving forward, the more people are attracted to me are the people in a similar field, which is mental health, or who are in the Yoruba culture. So I see, you know, some of the folks coming together and us doing this, doing the same initiative together. So I guess, you know, what would be your opinion, your suggestion rather, about folks who do have that ka, the akra of a leader? Like, you know, what's some things that, you know, you should be building on, or some of the strong points that I guess you had to learn having a similar, you know, ori? And also, I guess, could you comment on any kind of progress that, you know, you have done thus far with self-sustainability?
You mean self-sustainability as far as a communal project, or what exactly? What do you mean?
Yeah, as a communal project, as going forward, as just finding our independent, you know, moving forward with independent land and independent sustainability with us as all, you know, just Africans, just us.
So this is the kind of the blueprint. Like now, at the beginning of the show, we were talking about Ojida purification, so forth, and why it operationalizes ancestral religion. So we're in a condition, and then we talked about the whole piece about Osara setting Heru, setting Nebehet, and the condition that we find ourselves in now. The particular part of that quote-unquote story are, just like in the past, we had Maroons, Okufo, the warriors and warrioresses who escaped the plantation. They went up into the north and to the swamps and so forth. and began to establish and reestablish their culture. The first thing they would do, of course, they held on to the culture. And once they held on to their culture, then they could escape and they could separate and break free from the enslavement. Then they would go back, like Offset did, and grab other people and take them back, you know, into the free territory. And once they got enough people together, then they could formulate something and then they could wage war against the whites and their offspring. We're in the same condition now. So we're in that phase of breaking away from that plantation-type mentality, people who engage in authentic ancestral religion, authentic culture based on blood circle, based on inheritance, not based on running around giving thousands and thousands of people we never met and believing that we're just empty, impotent vessels and we can't know anything because we were born in America, so we have to go and worship somebody else, which is some nonsense. Once we, you know, reconnect with our ancestors and ancestors of our direct blood circle and purify ourselves, Ahojita, then we connect with others who are doing the same thing. We're in that process now. That's one reason we're even having the radio program, Ojita, to connect those people, just like we connect them on the Ning site. Connecting people, you know, through this radio program so people can begin the process of embracing Nanasom within their own blood circle. In English, it will be translated in one, if you were to use the English language, African-American ancestral religion. Religion coming directly from the ancestresses and ancestors of our people. So once we engage that process, purify, then we can connect with other people who are doing the same thing. And again, we already have the skill set in the various fields of endeavor, engineering, medicine, government, institution building, all those different things, agriculture. We have people in those different areas. The one thing that we have not done that will unify those disparate elements is culture, and culture is animated by ancestral religion. Until we get that piece straight, then nothing else is going to happen. Whites and their offspring understand that, so they don't care. They don't mind people going to MIT. They don't mind people going to, you know, all kinds of universities and developing their skill sets because they know they're going to use all that talent to support the whites and their offspring. So they don't care about that. As long as we don't deal with ancestral religion, they're straight because they know nothing's going to happen. So we have to deal with the ancestral religion, purification, which animates that. We deal with that, and with in a very short time, we can begin to build physical structures, connect with people. You don't have to have the entirety of the, you know, the race unified. All you need is the immune system cells to handle the enemy, and everybody else will fall in line later and benefit later. So the process we're in right now is just even letting people know that purification is key. Ojida is key. Ahojita, self-purification, physically, spiritually, and so forth, is key as a prerequisite to move forward. And it doesn't take years and decades. It doesn't take all that time. Somebody can purify themselves within a matter of weeks. And once they do that, they connect with other people who are doing the same thing. So we're in that process now of getting that word out. It's one reason we were going to different states, and we will continue to do that. And people are already in those different states that we've traveled to engage in those processes. So there's different cells around the country who are engaged in these processes. And once they move to those different levels, then we, you know, people will connect. But we're marooned right now, and we're engaged in that process.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm going to run with that. And that does, you know, resonate as well. And, of course, you know, sticking through it, sticking through the culture, man. I hit my shrine nightly, and I do receive the information of where I should be going and what I should be doing, and you know, I take it and run with it, even though if I feel like I should be reading and doing something elsewise, you know, I run what I'm being told. Of course, you know, the diet is key, so now I do resonate with that. You know, the last question that is kind of you know, off topic that I just, you know, was inquiring about. You know, like as I said before, you know, I'm trying to, I feel like not as a feeling of being inferior, but I do catch what you're saying, but I do feel that there's something in me that's saying, you know, to go further and get myself, you know, initiated. And I did speak with one of your you know, one of your good sisters, Nyla, E.I. Nyla, she, you know, chatted with me and referred some people that may be in assistance. So trying to weed out some of the charlatans. One gentleman that I was, you know, was up under, the only thing that I saw that he may had that looked, quote-unquote, enticing was understanding the priesthood of Ra and saying that, you know, he is under that that system still exists and he's initiated under that system. My question is that back in the days that the priesthood of Ra was called the Ur Maaz, the greatest of seers, putting an emphasis on the power, the strength that this priesthood once held. And so the Inyun Kapone, and if Aludamare or Rorg, you know, whatnot, if these are the similar divinities as Ra, why, or do you think that that priesthood still continues, or do you think it's just, like, from what I've been hearing, it may be a quote-unquote possible, you know, something that they keep under wraps, understanding that it's such a powerful and such a dangerous, you know, energy that people are dealing with. Do you think that priesthood still exists today in traditional African religion?
Oh, no, definitely. No, it's not under wraps. It still exists. It's not, just like the various priesthoods and priestesses of the different divinities, they still exist in different cultures. It just depends on who's more influenced by, say, Islam or something, and who's not. So, for example, in Vodun, Ra is called Da. So people have shrines to Da, Ida Huedo, male and female, you know, rainbow serpent, creator, creatress of the world. They get possessed by Da. They have shrines to Da. They're priests and priestesses of Da. They, you know, they still deal with that. In the Yoruba tradition, people are, for those who are, say, for example, initiated to Oshumare, which is actually Ra'et, the rainbow serpent, female, they're still initiated to her. That's Ra'et. Odumare or Etumare is actually Ra because of the influence of Islam. They've conflated Olodumare or Eledumare with Olorun, which is inaccurate. They're saying that's just another name of the supreme being, and Olodumare is he's the creator, he's this, he's that, no female, and, you know, they've corrupted that because of the influence of Islam, but it's actually Odumare and Oshumare are really Ra and Ra'et. They're still dealing with Oshumare, people being initiated to Oshumare. Some people, some authentic people, some people are, you know, clown just BSing. So in the various traditions, in Haitian Vodun, Dambala Huedo, Ida Huedo, the male and female, you know, serpent divinities, that's Ra and Ra'et. So, of course, in Yom Kippur, in Yom Kippur, in Akan culture, is Ra and Ra'et. They still communicate with us. They show themselves to us. Because of the influence of Christianity and Islam, some of these Akan people are saying Akan were monotheistic and Yom Kippur is just another name of Nyame, and that's nonsense. But Ra exists throughout all these traditions. Now, you will have some people who are just making things up. They'll tell you that, you know, they may be involved in Vodun or something or Yoruba, and then next thing you know, they're adding on some a pseudo-comedic titles and saying, oh, yeah, well, this is the ancient priesthood of Ra, and they're giving you some stuff that they just made up. So that's, that happens. But in the authentic culture, these divinities still exist. They still possess people. People still have shrines to them, and it never stops.
Okay. Hey, Tuag, Ojirafo, I mean, I appreciate it. You know, it's been a real good help and some really solid info that you got. I mean, I've been, you know, doing that the same. You know, I felt that, you know, those 14 pieces, you know, I took it upon myself when I extracted those, you know, those ACES shots, is that, you know, pick up, you know, 14 traditional African religions that still exist. So every time I read anything, you know, come out, I always, you know, cross-reference it with things that go on today. But, you know, thank you again for your work, man. I appreciate it.
Okay. Merci. I appreciate it.
To all.
And like we said, we just want to mention, when we talk about we're not dependent on anybody, we are not. But if your insamanfo directs you to somebody, then, you know, that's what it's, if your kra, your insamanfo, your bosom direct you to a particular individual and they're connected to, you know, some ritual practices, then at least you know that your Unsamafo are doing the directing, so then you have, you know, a credible source. So maybe that person actually is literally your blood relative. That particular person you go, you are connected with or you put in contact with under the direction of your Unsamafo, that may be your cousin. Just like if there was a brother, if there were two brothers on the continent and one of them was taken into slavery and one of them wasn't, 300 years later, the descendants of the ones on the continent are walking around right now, and then 300 years later, the ones descendant of the one who was taken away from the continent, his descendants are walking around in America. They are literally cousins. And if you get on a plane and go over there, they come over here, you literally, your cousins are literally walking around. So sometimes they will direct you to your own people. Our point has been, though, that this notion that black people in America, unlike people in Haiti, they preserve Vodun. People, as well as the Congo tradition and others. People in Cuba, some of our people preserve the Yoruba tradition and the Congo tradition and other traditions. People in Jamaica preserve the Akan tradition. They preserve other traditions. People in Brazil, they preserve, you know, Candomblé. They preserve the tradition, Yoruba tradition, Vodun, other traditions. But when it comes to North America, for some reason we've been taught by the whites and their offspring and others that we preserve nothing, and therefore we are dependent on other people to come and save us, the whole messianic nationalism nonsense, because we're just ignorant, inferior, empty vessels, and many of our people believe that. But in reality, we preserve ancestral religion. It's in our blood circle, and we are dependent on no one. We can establish, we are establishing, reestablishing, and perpetuating our traditions that we brought with us in our blood circle. People, some people will come from the continent and come from the Caribbean and come and get initiated into our system because they continue to be perpetuated. Okay, so 3461, Michiavo. Just listening? Okay. Okay, Michiavo 4197. Okay, you just listening?
Yeah, I'm just listening.
Okay.
How you doing, brother? Chris?
Oh, what's up? Kojo, is that Kojo and Ama?
Yeah, Kojo, Ama, and a whole bunch of people from Connecticut is here listening to you.
Okay, Michiavo, may I thank you for checking us out.
Yes, brother. We just want to send out our appreciation to you, and very happy about the work that you're doing.
Well, may I say, and this is for the people on the chat and on the phone, brothers and sisters from Connecticut. They have a community. They're studying, learning, and doing some good work out there. We were out there in December. We're going to come back as soon as we can make it back out there. So, you know, we appreciate, you know, everything you've done for us, and we will be seeing you back in Connecticut real soon. We're going to put something together. We should be, you know, we'll let everybody know, but we will be back in the area this summer.
Yes, brother. A couple
okay.
of sisters in the room, I had some questions, but it seems like you keep answering the questions before they ask them.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, I guess that's a good thing. All right. Okay, well, I appreciate it. And also, you can also put questions in the chat as well if you have something. And then, of course, you can email us at any time, you know, with any questions. And on the Ning side.
Okay, no problem.
And I'm going to put a link.
Okay, Kwesi?
Yes.
Okay, I have a quick question. Can you explain the red skin and the black skin over, if you don't mind?
Okay, so if you you look at the, we have a document post. We actually put a couple of pictures. We put a picture of a Maasai woman from East Africa, and then we have a picture of a sister who is Tere from the Senegal region in Africa, and you'll see that the Maasai sister, of course, she's dark brown. If you saw her walking down the street, she's a black woman from Afuraka, Afuraka. She's dark brown, but she has red undertone. And the sister who's Serea, she's dark brown, but she has black undertone. So that's the reason we would say someone is Kamau or black or Gesher or red, or in our Khan tradition, we would say somebody is Kokaw or red or Tuntum or black. Everybody's dark brown, but some people have red undertones or black undertones. Connected not only to the red earth and the black earth, just like we have in Kemet and Deshert, Kemet, the black land, Deshert, the red land. In Akan, Asase Koko, the red earth, Asase Tuntum, the black earth, but also Althara's energy animates the black earth. So his energy is a little bit more cool and so forth, so that cool, fertile black earth energy, he animates that. And the people who are connected to that kind of energy will naturally manifest that kind of temperament. That cooler kind of energy will show up in their temperament, and it will also show up in their phenotype. The people who are connected to the red earth, that is correct, connected to the red earth. He's not the only divinity connected to the red earth, but he's one of them. He has a more hot, fiery energy. So that hot, fiery energy will manifest, and that hot, fiery, reddish, burning kind of energy will manifest through the phenotype of the person who's connected to that energy and connected to that kind of land initially. So you'll see the red undertones in a dark brown person or the black undertones in a dark brown person. That's the difference.
Okay. Merase, I just needed some more clarity on that.
Okay.
Merase, I appreciate it.
Okay, yeah, now I'll say that. May I say for calling? Okay. Okay, so we're gonna go to all right, we're gonna go to 5035. Michiawo. Okay, just listening. All right, we're going to go to 8782, Michiawo.
I'm just listening.
Okay, just listening. All right. Okay, we're going to go to 4255. Okay, just listening, 4255. All right. Okay, so I'm going to check the chat real quick. I think that's everybody. We went through all the calls. People are still hanging on for the overtime session. I just want to look through the chat real quick. Okay, once this had a question, I believe, hold on one second. Some dark-complected African-Americans talk about authenticity and how I'm not really black. I'm classified as the Western light-skinned designation. What is your understanding about black people being too light to be African? Okay. All right, so basically, difference between us, Afro-Arakani, Afro-Arakani people, and them, non-Afro-Arakani, non-Afro-Arakani people, meaning Asians, Europeans, white Hispanics, pseudo-Native Americans, who are just Asians who migrated and invaded this hemisphere, so-called Hindus and other groups. The difference between us and them is we have a Krawa, a soul, a Ka, a Ka'et, divine consciousness, a divinity, a deity that's assigned to us by the Supreme Being that dwells in the head region, or Ori, Inu, and Yoruba, and Okra, Krawa, and Akan. We have that, and they don't. So as long as you have that, then you're an Afurakani Afurakaiti person, even by definition. Afuraka Afurakaiet. A ka and kaiet is, you know, soul, divine consciousness. And so we, if you look in the book, the Okra Okra Complex, the Soul of Akanko, we have a section talking about race and the Okra, the definition, the difference between us and them. It starts off, the difference between us and them is those of our people, tiny percentage of our people who migrated away from Afuraka, Afurakai, went up into northern Eurasia thousands of years ago because of their specific kinds of activity, perverse activity, sexual deviance, incest, murder, and so forth. They repelled their kra, so they no longer have a kra. That loss of the kra also precipitated a loss of pigmentation. Them engaging in incest and dissexuality, creating, you know, autoimmune diseases and albinism at a high frequency. This is what produces the whites in their offspring phenotypically, but spiritually, which prefigures or precipitates this physical degeneration, was a spiritual degeneration of not having a crop. As long as you have an okra, a ka, a kaet, then you're an Afurakani, Afurakaini person. Only black people have that. Some of us are lighter brown because of the rape and murder and invasions in the blood circle. As we always say, if you get a cut on your arm, scab develops. That scab is evidence that violence took place. It's also evidence that your body healed from that wound, but it's also a reminder so you make sure you don't engage in the same activity. Because of the invasion and pollution of our bloodlines through the enslavement process, when we reincarnate through our descendants now, our descendants have mixed for one reason or another, usually through rape and so forth. So we have lighter brown skin that we incarnate through. When we incarnate through the womb of our great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaughter, hundreds of years after, or 100 years after we were living on Earth, we made our transition, we're an ancestor, we're an ancestress. We watch our descendants generation after generation grow up in America, and then one of our descendants gets married and then draws our spirits back into the womb for the first time in over 100 years, and we're born into the world again. Because of what happened through the blood circle, we have a lighter skin, which is a scar. It's evidence that violence took place in the ancestral blood circle, but it's also evidence that the melanin dominance won out, or else we would be melanin recessive, which we are not. So you can be a light-skinned black person. As long as you have a kra, then you're an Afurakani, Afurakaiti person. If you don't have a kra, then you're not. That's the only difference. But we go into detail about that in the book, The Okra Okra Complex, The Soul of Akanko, as well as the video, 2.5-hour video that's associated with the book, where we go through the book in that video and dissect what's in the book. Okay. Let me see. I just want to check. Oh, okay. Okay, 1507, Michiawa.
What is up, my man? Congratulations, great
show.
What's up?
Oh, merase. Merase. What's going on?
Okay. So you got the question, that's good, because that's a good sister. So now if you need some help getting through anything, maybe fielding calls next time or being a chat host, we can set it up beforehand and I can be your go-to guy if you need that.
Merase, I appreciate that. Yeah, because I didn't get a chance to look at everything on the chat while I was going through the presentation. So, I'll give you a call. We can talk about that. That'll be cool.
And I had posted it with what you were just dealing with, what you were dealing with beforehand, as far as how we carried our system over here with us over here. It'll be nice. I mean, you touched on it, and you and I have had conversations about it. But I'm sure you're going to dedicate a show or half a show to that, because I still need some more convincing, and I'm sure a lot of other folks have just been inundated with. Oh, well, hoodoo, we took bits and pieces, but your argument is we brought it over wholesale, so it would be cool if you expand on that on a future show.
Oh, yeah, well, that'll be a Keegan, every show we're going to touch on that because, like, for example, we have to, and maybe one of the shows we'll dedicate part of it, like one of the hours to the publication, the icon origin of the term hoodoo. So we show the etymological origin, show that the Odunsinifo and the Oduyefo literally means conjurer, root worker, root doctor, and so forth. Nduru or Ndu meaning medicine is where the term Udu or Hudu comes from, talking about root medicine, using the roots of trees, bark, and so forth. When we get possessed, if you have possession and you have ancestral communication, then you have a whole tradition because you can communicate with the ancestresses and ancestors and find out specifically what you need to do and what you don't need to do, what taboos are associated with ritual activities and what things you need to stay away from, and you can connect with the forces of nature. If you have deity possession, ancestral communication, you have a tradition. We have both of those. We've had that and we continue to have it. Yes, there are some people who mix things with, you know, European nonsense over the past, say, 100 years, more so over the past 60, 70 years, with regard to hoodoo and voodoo and so forth. But initially, white people were outlawing hoodoo, outlawing voodoo, because they knew these were the things that we were engaged in to wage war against the whites and their offspring, including chemical and biological warfare, where we would poison their food, poison the water supply, and wipe out these tribes or weaken them to the point where we were able to escape and wage war against them. So they saw it as criminal and evil. This was before, you know, some of them, you know, much later began to try to infiltrate, and as the sister who wrote the book, Mojo Working, starts talking about, they start profiteering and becoming marketeers in quote-unquote voodoo and products and stuff like that, and commercializing an aspect of it, really a way to attack it, melding things with the Psalms and pseudo-Native American nonsense and pseudo-Kabbalistical nonsense and melding these different things, trying to corrupt tradition. No different than white Hispanics trying to corrupt the tradition, the Yoruba tradition, with Catholicism or Spiritism and nonsense like that. But initially, the whites and their offspring, they were totally against any even mention of the term voodoo or hoodoo or whatever, because they saw that as quote-unquote evil. Because to them, it was evil because it was something that would motivate us to kill them, to exterminate them, and free ourselves. But as long as you have and deity possession, ancestral communication, you have a tradition. And since we have those two things, you know, we have that capacity. We have that capacity to continue, to heal our people, to go into the forest like George Washington Carver and communicate with plant life and develop the medicines we needed right here in this region of Asante Afua. You don't have to import herbs from the continent and be dependent on whether or not the whites and our offspring are going to allow you to import an export herbs, you know what I'm saying? We need to be able to connect with Asase Afua, Asase Ya, right here where we are, and heal ourselves with, you know, what comes up out of the earth from her right here. Communicate with the plant life, the flora and fauna here, the spirits that animate them here, which we have been able to do. George Washington Carver is just one prominent example of that, but we have people in our families who are able to do that and are still able to do that. We have divinatory systems that are given to us right here, or we have preserved or have been restored right here in America. So we're not dependent on anybody. We just have to reconstitute the culture. That's why we talk about, you know, revolution and resolution. It's a right of return and a right of reconstitution. We have the right to return to our ancestors and ancestors, our ancestral culture, and we have the right to reconstitute ourselves and our culture and our nation. But it's also the rites, R-I-T-E, ritual rites of return and the rites of reconstitution. We need to restore the rites or rituals of communication and the rites of constitution ritually, and we have the capacity to do that. We just have to move on it. That's what we're doing now. The key to operationalize all of that is self-purification, ahojira.
All right, that's what's up. What you got on tap for next week?
We haven't put it together yet, but we will next coming weeks, like the different shows, at least a component of the show, just like we went through this text in Ancient Kemet, showing that the story of Asar, Aset, Heru is directly related to Afur Akani, Afur Akani people in general, but specifically to us as well right here in North America. There are other texts as well that are directly related to our people. It's not something far off or ancient or whatever. This directly deals and impacts us directly. For example, when we thought we wrote a note, the opening of the mouth and the eye ceremony in Ancient Kemet, so people talk about, you know, you read the text and, you know, people who are so-called scholars start pontificating about what this, you know, means. And they just talk about, well, these are spells that were read and all this other stuff and people need to avoid. It's very practical, the opening of the mouth and the eye. What people call, so-called sleep paralysis. When people have this, you know, these experiences of they're asleep, they try to wake up, they try to open their eyes, it feels like somebody's keeping their eyes closed, they try to speak or even yell or scream, and it feels like something is closing their mouth, they can't move, they're paralyzed. Feels like a spirit is controlling them. And they try to move, try to speak, try to scream, try to do whatever, and they're struggling to the point where they're sweating, trying to struggle in the bed, trying to move spiritually. And they can't move, they can't speak, they can't talk. If they focus on people who are involved in the culture, they focus on the ancestresses and ancestors, they're able to repel that spirit and they're able to move again, open their eyes, open their mouth, and so forth. In Hoodoo, they're called, what whites call sleep paralysis, they'll call it a witch is riding you. But this kind of spirit, wayward spirit, is on you, on your chest, they're riding you, and that's why you can't move, you can't do whatever. People have had these more detailed experiences. But when you evoke the ancestresses and ancestors, the Nsamafor, you invoke the Abosom, even just on a rudimentary level, you repel those spirits typically. Instead of struggling all night with them, some people are struggling for an hour or something like that. So when you invoke the Abosom, invoke the ancestresses and ancestors, you can open your eyes again, you can open your mouth again, and so forth. That's the opening of the eyes and the mouth, invocation of the Abosom, invocation of the ancestresses and ancestors. Same thing when somebody makes their transition. When they die, the spirit separates from the body. There are other discarnate spirits, like people who have been murdered, people hanging around, who would try to control the movements of the person. But if they invoke the Abosom, invoke the Nsamafor, they can repel those negative spirits so they can make a smooth transition to the ancestral realm so they won't just be hanging around earthbound, quote-unquote, haunting houses or hanging around the corner where they got shot or hanging around the place where they got stabbed and causing problems or distracting people. Every time they pull up at that stop sign, they distract somebody, and then the next thing you know is a bunch of crashes that happen at that stop sign. You know what I'm saying? People who are spiritual know it's the spirit causing that kind of problems, and they will go spiritually and remove that spirit. But the opening of the mouth and the eyes is very practical throughout the course of our everyday lives. If you have spiritual entities who are trying to control you, and that question came up earlier, invocation of the Abosom, invocation of the Nsamafor repels them. In the text of Kemet, that's what they were talking about, invocation of the Abosom. It wasn't just people standing, holding a papyrus, singing a prayer. You know what I'm saying? They're invoking the Abosom and evoking the Nsamafor to help the person make a smooth transition to the ancestral realm so they won't become earthbound, so they won't cause problems for the living. And it's the same thing throughout the course of our lives. Spirit realm, every night, some people are very receptive and they get receptive to negative entities, and there's a way to engage that opening of the mouth and eye. So these texts are directly related to us. We show one sister, for example, her daughter was in the hospital. She has asthma. You know what I'm saying? And she was going through a thing. But she's involved in culture, but she was looking for some assistance. We sent her, you know, a link to one of the texts from one of the papyri, I think the papyrus of Ani, the text about, you know, giving breath to the deceased in the spirit realm. That's not just talking about, and they have a little, you know, a ship sail and, you know, a mast and a sail from a ship and talking. It's not just about giving breath so the person can resurrect and symbolically and go into the ancestral realm in a harmonious way. It's also an invocation to help give breath to somebody who's losing their breath. It's an invitation to help somebody with asthma so that, you know, she can engage that particular chapter of the papyrus of Ani and help, you know, somebody with asthma ritually in connection with what else she was doing, you know, with regard to holistic medicine. So these things are very practical. Everything in the culture is practical. So we're going to deal with things like that.
Good answers, good answers. I ain't going to hold you up too much longer. You got 10 minutes left, so thank you.
No problem. May I say? Okay. So, let's see. All right, so I think we're going to actually, I think I don't see any extra, any other questions. So what we're going to do, we're going to end it right now. For those who are still in the chat, those who will, of course, be listening later on, you can go to the website, of course, download all the documentation. Of course, we have the links to the videos. Most of the videos go into detail about the publications that we've released, so you can have greater clarity on what's in the publication. Most of the videos are about 2 hours each, where we go into detail about these publications. And then for those who would like to become distributors of the soft cover versions of our publications, just you can email us, go to the OG.fo.com website, OGWIRAF3O.com. Links to it, of course, are on our blog talk page. You can contact us. It's on the NHOMA page, and that link is on the Blog Talk Radio page as well, on g.fo.com/NHOMA, NHOMA.html. If you want to engage that process as well, sell the soft cover publications for your own to generate money for yourself, also informing the community at the same time and helping that whole purification process. When people get the information, people, you know, give us different accounts of what has taken place. Some people just by reading the information we have on our Ajimi Fo Sim, the idiocy of rationalizing marijuana use. Many people over the years have told us they simply stopped smoking weed after years just by reading that piece, or just by listening to the Kuku Tum Tum, they stopped smoking, stopped drinking, and so forth. But then we also have those services, ritual practices within our culture that we can use through invocation of the Abo Sum and evocation of the Nsamafo to overcome substance abuse, domestic abuse, you know, neutralization. We have a process for that. Trauma realignment, you know, recovery, trauma recovery alignment. We have a process for that. Akuma Tra, Akuma Sa, Akuma Dine. Through our ancestral culture, we can overcome the negative effects of domestic abuse, substance abuse, abstinence, trauma, sexual abuse, all these different things. We have it within our culture. We don't have to go outside of our culture to connect with that. Same thing with mental illness. It's in the culture. And even if you go outside the culture, what they typically do is give you some pseudo-philosophy and drug you up very often. And it doesn't typically solve any problems. It just masks. So we have these different services. We have divination, of course, all those different things on the website. So, Irase, for everyone who checked out the show, everybody who will check out the show, contact us for any questions through the website. We're also on Facebook, afuraikaet, on Facebook. And we also have our Ning site, afuraka-afuraikaet.ning.com, which is a social network which you can join. And you can create a profile. There are forums, there are discussions, videos. People interact from different parts of the country, different parts of the world, who are all on the same page with regard to studying this information about ancient, authentic Afurakani, Afurakaitin ancestral religion, culture, and nation building. So, Merase, and we will be back next week at the same time, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for Ojira. Merase. What's up?